You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
What's going on?
Wait,
all right.
Where's my Chrome browser?
Where's your Chrome browser?
Man, where's your Firefox browser, please?
Where's your Brave browser?
Oh, that one is here. That is
I just have, yeah. God, I have not seen Chrome in so long.
Oh, well, that's all we use at work. And thus, yeah, just like all my shit is there. Taking up all my resources. All right, you said you started.
Oh, we're recording. Yeah.
Oh, we're recording. Yes. Hey, hi.
This is killer so far.
Such an exciting podcast so far.
Yeah, we're definitely getting it together.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. It's Triple Radio, the first of 2026.
Wow.
Yay.
Look at us.
That's a sound.
It's Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Hello.
We are here. Yeah, 8 o'clock snuck up on me. That's why I'm like bewildered.
That's
true. Yeah,
I've been eagerly anticipating 8 o'clock for like an hour.
Yeah.
Well, about an hour ago, it's been like not a long, boring day at home. I've had plenty to do because it's not a day off anywhere else in the world. So all my international clients, mostly Canada, have been pinging me for work stuff. But like, you know, all my girls are off from school and they've had a lazy day. So at like 7 o'clock, I happened to mention Weiss, the Starfleet Academy show, Starfleet Academy on Paramount Plus. I asked Weiss if he had seen Starfleet Academy, listeners, and he had not, because otherwise I would have tried to make time today so that we could talk about it, to watch it. But since he didn't, I was like, yeah, okay, fuck it. No big deal. I'll watch it sometime over the next 10 days or before my Paramount Plus current subscription ends. And
yes,
so it's 7 o'clock. My wife says, hey, do you and Julia want to watch that Star Trek show together? And I'm like, that pilot is 1 hour and 15 minutes long. And so, no, I'm sorry. I don't have time at this point. So I've just been like killing an hour just waiting with nothing.
Yeah, if I have something to do, that's pretty much the whole day is revolving around. So I have to schedule out when I'm eating food, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it was, I mean, yeah, we are Buffalo. We have snowstorm coming in, I guess. I don't really know how it's going to affect me, but like it was kind of snowy. It was really nasty outside for about 30 minutes earlier. I was literally about to run out and grab something. And then like I couldn't see my neighbor's house and I was like, oh, I guess I'm not going to go anywhere. And then
fuck that.
The threat of that coming back just kind of kept me in the house for the rest of the day. And schools are closed for tomorrow already. So
really? Wow. Oh, wow.
Yep. Yeah. This is pretty normal operating procedure at this point. They like to close everything the day before. If the county is telling them that they need to close, much to the aggravation of some people who live in the district in which I work, because they usually don't have that much snow, but everybody lives everywhere else because no one can afford to live in that town. I certainly could not, we already had one lazy day. There is another lazy day coming. Yesterday was also pretty lazy.
Nice.
I mean, yeah, but, I was at MAGFest last weekend, transition.
So far less busy than your previous weekend was. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's me just kind of, you know, getting caught up on cleaning and settling down and relaxing after MAGFest.
Yeah.
Which was insane.
Yeah. Please tell us about MAGFest. Let me start by positing that I have been following journalist and author the UK's own Stuart Gipp.
He was there.
The Video Game History Foundation's Phil Salvador was apparently distributing pictures of Mortal Kombat 4's Quan Chi. Yes. Everywhere that
I
he could.
I don't know he looks like, but I didn't see him. I saw a posting about it, but
you encountered no Quan Chis?
I did not. There's
I would say Phil Salvador did not do his fucking job then. Phil,
yeah, I don't know.
Shame on you.
Maybe if I had been in an elevator with him, I would have gotten a picture of Quan Chi. But like, you know, there's like a lot of people
everywhere.
There's a lot of people. If I'd been looking for them, if I'd looked in some treasure chests or something, which are still a thing.
Yeah. Nadia Oxford was there. Retronauts, co-host of Acts of the Blood God. Nadia Oxford came down from Canada. Another international visitor braving, braving their passport and braving the dangers of modern America to come and watch the Proto Man.
Who got their start writing about silent horror. Go on.
Yeah.
So yeah, like every game journal that I followed said like what either I'm sure for some of them it was their first time. Stuart Gipp in particular was like, this might have been his first trip to America because he was like, oh, Baltimore, the food here is fantastic. This is what Americans eat all the time. Wendy's is bloody
Stuart
good.
Stuart Gipp? Do I hear Stuart Gipp on the
weird stew? That's my story.
I have no idea what this guy sounds like. That's
well, it's pretty much what he sounds like. Phil Salvador, who has presented, who I have seen present there on behalf of the Video Game History Foundation, you know, even he, I think, was like, wow, this was a fucking banger year.
It was a banger year.
It was a real banger year. But, you know, this was for you, Tim. This was a year where you... this was your sole responsibility was Video Game Name That Tune this year.
Mm-hmm. And my child.
And being a parent. Yes.
Two big responsibilities.
But a very different experience to which I can
attest. It was, yes. We had an awesome time. So like that, but it was a thing, the most boring thing in the world to Richard was me stopping to talk to another adult.
You have friends? Fuck you for having friends.
And you just run into them at MAGFest and like, that's when you can talk to them. Yep. Probably. Yeah. It's like if you bump into them and otherwise it's like, who knows? Yeah. So that was like the one bummer is that I did not get to spend as much time talking to adults, certainly as I would at a normal, I don't even know what the fuck that is anymore. MAGFest 2020 and before MAGFest.
Yeah,
I guess. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, so, you know, got to, you know, bump into people here and there, and talk to them for, you know, 5-10 minutes and then just be like, I gotta go. This kid hates this.
He hates this. He hates you. He hates me a little bit right now for talking to you.
He only has, well, you know, it's balancing the patience of, you know, he didn't want to do, you know, he wanted to check out, we checked out a lot of the concerts. We checked out almost every main stage act for at least a few songs.
Dang.
with a few exceptions, we were there for at least a couple songs, or if not, like I caught them on MAGFest TV at some point later in the weekend or immediately following. The only things I saw none of were like the Tiberian Sun's Ace Combat, whatever that was. And I didn't see any of Casey Lee Williams at all, which I thought that was going to be an easy sell for him because he, like a couple months ago, he started watching Ruby. And I was like, dude, like the woman who sings these songs, she's going to be at MAGFest. Like we should go listen, you know, do her stuff. But then he kind of dropped off of Ruby. And then at that particular moment in the weekend, that was just not what he wanted to do. So we didn't go up there. So I look forward to catching.
Okay. I'm sorry. These were proper nouns that I was not familiar with, but I think I pieced it together at the end. Ruby is not spelled. It's spelled with an X, right?
R-W-B-Y.
That's right. Okay. Yes.
Because
this is a local show.
sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. It stands for the names of the characters, though. The lead character's name is Ruby, spelled presumably properly. I don't know. You can watch Ruby if you want. it's on YouTube. So it's like, it was balancing that and his desire to, you know, do shopping, to spend a ton of time in the game room, and then catch shows, which I wanted to do, or do other things that I wanted to do. And, you know, still having to sustain our existence.
Yeah.
Which is always important. It was very unfortunate. So let's see. I cut a little bit of a band called Gunderslam. They're good. I caught the Triforce Quartet set. I think we were like falling. I think we were falling asleep Friday night, and they were on the MAGFest TV replay. So like, kind of maybe it was Saturday night. I don't remember. But yeah, I got to see like about, I watched about half their set before I also fell asleep. We went to the Rebecca Sugar show, which was huge.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. That's very cool.
Yeah. This is,
hey, you sent that pic.
Yeah. I was texting you guys while I was there and just like, yeah, a lot of Steven Universe fans, go figure. And, them just bringing up like, oh yeah, this person did like storyboards and wrote some of these songs for Steven Universe. And now they're going to play a few songs for you. Apparently Stemmage had a big hand in putting that whole thing together.
Wow.
He's part of her band.
Yes. Stemmage is a tie that binds a lot of MAGFest bands together. It seems like, just involved in a lot of different stuff. And yeah, you know, Jer was there from Skatoon Network, playing, in that band. But yeah. Just like a lot of stuff going on. The people just, the crowd just going apeshit. I'm not as familiar with Steven Universe, but you know, Richard was enjoying it as well. So we, huge crowd. So we left, we came back for Proto Men, the first of three Proto Men shows. That was act two.
Oof.
Watched some of that. It was Thursday, so I didn't want to keep on that long. So then we went upstairs and caught the rest of it on the TV.
They did act two first?
They did act two first. They did it chronologically in terms of the story.
Okay.
Yes.
I have to read the lyrics at some point.
Yes. Because it goes act two, then act one, then act three.
Okay.
Which they are doing three shows in Nashville in June as well in that same order. So, yeah, just FYI. But they were closing out the stage every night, which is wild.
Yeah. How was the line to get in?
It was fine. It actually wasn't a line. I was at no point was I standing in line. Well, also helps if you don't have a bag. Don't bring a bag to the concert hall at MAGFest. You get in very fast. If you have a bag, you will be waiting forever.
Yeah. That's always been my experience. Just don't bring
a bag. Don't bring a bag down there. I definitely saw people waiting in line. I don't remember if we got there like early or what, but I think we were there a little bit early, I want to say Thursday night. So maybe it just didn't affect me because I had the wherewithal to get in the room quickly.
Yeah.
Friday was a lot of hanging around, playing a lot of pinball. They had so much pinball there going on. Oh, I need to have my pictures so I can remember like stuff that I did. I feel like they had more pinball than ever before. Like they had probably, I'm trying to think, at least 4 2-sided rows of pinball machines, along with pinball machines against the wall. And then like another row, at the end there, it just felt like it felt like 25 to 33% more pinball. There was a basketball shooting machine, which Richard had a lot of fun with. One of them was broken the whole weekend, so he just got to sit there and just throw the ball for about half the weekend. No, this was awesome because he got to practice. And then there was another machine that worked next to it. So then he would get to go and actually try to go for a high score on the actual functional machine.
I'm looking for your photos. I went to Blue Sky first. I guess I should have gone to Facebook first because that's where you posted pictures.
Well, that's right. I did the big dump today of pictures. Yes, I... because it failed twice because I guess there was just so much stuff. And I haven't gotten to doing all of it on Blue Sky.
God, you posted 40 pictures.
Yes. There was just a lot of stuff. I feel like I didn't see half the indie games or at least didn't touch them. You know, we like to talk about games in this podcast. There was an FMV rhythm game. They had a really eye-catching booth and was really weird to play. I played this like in the arcade portion. They had this like dual stick shooter game called Vestigial that was kind of like looked like a Sega.
Looking at it now,
yeah, like a Space Harrier type looking game, but you controlled it with two sticks like you would virtual on.
Interesting.
Destroy objectives to like get through a stage. Just, you know, cool aesthetic, felt cool.
Looks game. Super awesome.
Yeah, it was neat. Richard, I got a picture of him playing some game called Spin and Splash. I didn't play it myself. Adorable. It looks like a washing machine.
Oh my god, he's
doing something with. Yeah. Finger Twister, which was just, it looked like, you know, a, yeah, it's just a wooden box with a 6x6 grid of colored buttons on it that you'd play Twister on with your fingers. It was just like a neat little thing. There's a lot of neat little things there. Like there was a prototype of an air hockey pinball mashup game where each player has like flippers and there's stuff like out on the table to like knock the pucks around. Yeah, it was a little jank, but it was a prototype.
That's,
yeah.
You know, all the physical stuff, the stuff that depends on physical, like a unique physical interface, is always really cool to try at the indie showcase, mm-hmm. but also a little disappointing because I'm like, this is a lot of fun. I will never be able to play this again in my life.
Well, you never know. I mean, once upon a time at MAGFest, one of those indie arcade games was Killer Queen, you know? So like you never know.
But yeah, I guess.
Yeah. There is a lot of stuff where it's like, yeah, you only see it in MAGFest. I saw something, I didn't get to play it, where it on one for the person's left hand, I think they had like a little arrow keypad and they'd put in arrow inputs. It would launch like a vegetable across the screen. And then they had a paper cutter like you would see in the print shop at a school, like to cut the vegetables as they went across.
Yeah, this FMV game looks crazy. I love the way that this looks.
Yeah, there was just like all kinds of things playing on those screens. Like he had like 8 projectors set up, like projecting like FMV things around there. It was really interesting. Kind of weirded Richard out, which I think is appropriate for an FMV game. I did talk a little bit about the fish tank, which was in like the back, and you'd scan your badge because every badge has a barcode on it. You'd scan the badge and it would put a fish in the tank, and then it would get hungry at like intervals. Like when you first scanned it in, it was hungry like immediately. So you'd scan again and then it would be like 30 seconds. So you wait around, you feed it again, and then a minute, and then like, you know, 10 minutes. Eventually it was like 4 hours. So every 4 hours you could come back and feed your fish.
All right. Your fish was named Dr. Queen.
Mine was named Dr. Queen. Yeah, Richard's was Calm Allen. And there was like a bunch of, you know, there was quests.
Don't
and
tell
stuff.
Alan.
Like,
he's going to get super just crazy about this. No, I'm talking about Calm Allen. Oh, you can tell Calm Allen.
Yeah, Calm Allen. Yeah, just all kinds of cool stuff in the arcade space. You know, tons of rhythm games that were constantly getting used at all hours of the day.
Yeah.
Some scooter game Richard's playing. They had
scooter game looks sick.
A ping pong game where you had to like bounce the ping pong balls off of this little pad into a hole in the middle. And there's like other pads to bounce it around. But you know, it was just fun, tactile game. I played a game called, what is this called? Aqua Rush, which I want to say was a Namco puzzle game where there's this kind of like narrow like column, and coming down from the top are like these like bubbles of water. And then you shoot bubbles of water up from the bottom, but you have 3 buttons you can use to like make the bubble you're shooting conform with the shape of what is coming down from the top in order to make combos and lines.
Ooh,
it was really cool. I took a picture because I want to forget it, and I want to be able to look it up and play it on something, because it was just like, oh, this feels different than any other puzzle game, you know, I can remember playing, where it's like, oh, I'm making the shape of the piece that I'm fitting in to the thing. I got a tattoo for charity.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that because I just scrolled past that
master sword, I assume.
Yes, it's the master sword. Yeah. To go with the Triforce that was already there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that has become a big part of the charity booth there. Which the charity department, I mean, it is an insane operation at this point, the amount of money they pull in. It's just wild. But they have 8 tattoo artists. They had 8 this year. Which I think the first year they had 4, then last year they had 6, and this year they had 8.
Jeez.
And
makes sense.
That's Yeah. So, you know, they had like a bunch of flash sheets there, stuff you could choose from. And the way they did it this year, the first year they had like a physical sign up sheet, but people were there at like 5 a.m. lined up to get signed onto the sheet.
Jeez.
But this year they just had a thing where you scanned a QR code and like filled out a form and then you went into a lottery for each day.
Oh, thank goodness.
And they would just pull you at random.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would they like text you and be like, hey, can you be here in 5 minutes?
They would shoot you a text. They're like, hey, you've been selected. Please make your way down to the table. You know, reply, confirm, whatever.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Also helps if you know who runs the charity department. Mm. But no, I actually did. Well, that did help, but I also did get picked. So it's all on the up and up. yeah, I have a strategy for next year that I'm not going to disclose in case other people steal my strategy. But
all right, now I'm looking at the badge. It is pretty awesome. And
I just want to mention the girl who did my tattoo. Just chatting with her. It was her first MAGFest. Like, she mind blown, obviously. And she said at some point she had graduated high school in 2016. And I was telling her, I was like, yeah, I've been going to MAGFest for like 23 years at this point. She's like, whoa, I haven't talked to anybody who's been here longer than that. I'm like, yeah, there's not many. There's like two guys who have been to more of them than me at this point. Three. And they're all there. But just like... She's well, like, hey, we're not that far
shout
apart.
Out I'm to
like,
Manic Pixie Tattoo for being incredibly young and doing a great job with your tattoo.
She did a great
job. And I say 31 is not incredibly young. Yeah.
But she's like, 28, oh, we're not, 28. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's not incredibly young, but it was just like, oh, we're not that far apart. And I'm like, I graduated in 1999. She's like, yeah, I was two. I was out of the womb. I'm like, if I feel old. yes, the swag, which is sitting back here.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, it looks like it's like a full on. Was a real word. It's got four directional buttons, an A and a B button. Like,
yeah. And I know they've been. I'm holding it up for you know, the Twitch stream and not people that are listening.
I've never seen this thing, so I'm looking at it.
Yeah. But look, someone I have to report. I love how we get at least a bot every stream. Good for us.
Oh,
hey.
Yeah, they've been doing these crazy things for a while. And I remember early on, it was just like, you know, it might be made of like metal or like it was like a fancy plastic thing. Then at a certain point, it evolved into these things, which I'm assuming are built on some kind of like Raspberry Pi.
Like an Arduino.
Architecture. Kinda. Yeah. Arduino thing where it's like, yeah, this is like basically like a circuit board that has a D-pad, has, you know, menu, pause buttons, BA buttons. It has a touchpad on it.
It has a like touch down here. Pad?
This
it
is a touchpad.
I'm also seeing here. A microphone.
Yeah, probably. Hang on. Where's
right the above button? The right eye? Yes,
there we go. Okay, I'm turning. You can't see the lights, but it's. Hang on. Let me if I move it back here. Just take my word for it. Oh, there you go. You can if I hold it way back here, you can see that it's
lit up,
lighting up. So actually,
oh,
nope. Yeah.
There you go. Still, there we go. Look at that. It's cool as hell.
Yeah, it lights up. Yeah, it has like a bunch of different colored LEDs in it, and the eyeballs of it. It's a Mega Man helmet, basically. And yeah, it's got like, oops, shoot. It has a built-in Street Pass feature where it's like you'd make an avatar, and it would Street Pass with how do I do this exit? Sorry, I got confused there. Okay. Yeah. It would Street Pass with other swag holders, and then it would put their avatar into your like little, like it has three little areas. Like it has like the gazebo area. It has the concert space. It has the arcade, and then they would show up there.
Oh, that's so cool.
On your swag. It has, let's see, there's music. There's a music sequencer and a jukebox.
What?
There are games on here.
Oh my God.
There's a like homebrew Mega Man game. There's Picross. There is Swag Doku, a runner game. Just like there's like 9 or 10 games on here.
Incredible.
Utilities. Yeah. It just like a whole bunch of shit.
That's it's cool crazy. As hell.
Yeah, it is. I've never gotten one of these before. And I was just like, you know, I'm, you know, going in mostly as like a fan here. Let's get this and see how it do. Yeah, it's got there's a USB-C port on here.
God damn.
Yeah, and just, you know, play around with it. And like, yeah, I haven't even done everything there is to do with it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I, and
well, what's cool is that it looks like if you wanted to like continue to, because it's just a circuit board, right? With bare little hat switch, micro switch buttons. So if you wanted to fit an actual D-pad and actual concave buttons on top of those, you could.
Yeah, there was somebody who I saw. It looked like they had like some kind of like a 3D printed like case for it that went around like the edge of it. I don't know if that was a thing in merch that I just didn't notice, because that would have made me feel a little safer about carrying this thing around.
Oh shit!
Oh no!
Good timing.
Well, the good news was it got caught on the arm of my chair, so I dropped it and it just hung from the arm of my chair.
I always have chairs around.
Yeah, I kicked in for like the whole like backer level, so it was like I got like a bag and a shirt and there's a magazine, a whole magazine in there, and a water bottle, and
how much was that above the cost of regular
admission? It was like a hundred bucks
for a t-shirt and all the swag and a custom built handheld that has games on it. That's a good value this year.
Yes, I felt pretty good about it. Yeah, I don't know. They had more beyond that, but I didn't want to do that. So yeah, that was a cool. That was cool for baby's first swag. I was like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah, that rocks.
What else did I do? We caught like a little bit of act. So Friday night, was act. Well, Danny B was there. That's right. Saw some of Danny B's set playing some Crypt of the Necro Dancer. Name That Tune, right?
Name That Tune, yeah.
Yeah, it was the best Name That Tune game ever against some odds. It was weird.
It was a real heater. Yeah,
we were on the XP stage, which is a relatively new thing.
Okay,
which was it was in a panel room like last year, and it's for like just it's another stage for bands, basically more or less. Like, okay, you know, here's another place where we can book like smaller acts.
Was the ballroom?
This was in a hallway.
Oh, okay.
If you ever came in the entrance from the parking garage into the convention center and you look to the left, there's a hallway there. That's where the XP stage was.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. It was a fine space.
That's not unreasonable, I guess.
No. Well, that was kind of a thing. I looked at the schedule, like they did non-concert events in that space like around that time every day, like one of the other nights was like a cosplay idol thing, so it's like, oh okay, they're just, you know, main stage concerts are going on and those are probably the shows people are going to see, so I think kind of what it is so they can leave the main stage for like the larger acts in the late afternoon evening and have like smaller acts like on this other stage and just have different spaces for them and probably give people and equipment breaks. I'm sure it makes a lot of something easier with logistics and rehearsals, et cetera.
Yeah.
It was good. Not the biggest space and there weren't chairs. And we had to get everything set up, on the stage. Cause you know, it's a band space, not a panel space. Yeah. Had some trouble having working microphones for the whole time. But used a lot of my voice. It was a thing where I was, you know, I was trying to do the Tournament of Champions and get as many people who had won back as possible. But that's, I had three, you know, the guy who's won for 3 years, the guy who won for 3 years in the past, Papers, Please. And then Wood was there.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But you know, people don't make it to every single MAGFest like they used to, because it's difficult and you know, people's lives have changed wildly from 10, 15 years ago, where it's not a thing you can do every year. but even then, it was like I just happened through luck of the draw, called a bunch of really good players up to the stage. And it was a hell of a competition. It's like usually Name That Tune takes almost 2 hours to get through the game. This took like an hour and a half.
Okay.
We blazed through it. We started a little late, so it was probably, it might have even been a little bit shorter than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Because
is that
people
partly
were
due
just
to the talent of the competitors?
Yeah, that is wholly because instead of playing a song for, you know, 30 seconds and no one knowing it, we were playing like 5 seconds of a song and somebody knew it.
Jeez.
Like, yeah, people knew their stuff for the most part. They got called up there.
Now I see Matthew in one of these pictures. Did he compete or did he just come to watch?
No. Well, I'm sure his name was in the bag, but he didn't get called. I could very distinctly hear his voice calling out "Monster in my pocket" for that game. Matthew of Botchamania was out for his last MAGFest, but I don't think he lives in England. For those that don't know, so certainly he cannot make it to every single MAGFest. So, but he wanted to go and come and do another one, and so, you know, it was great to see him. Fortunately, bumped into him in the arcade while my child was busy playing video games, so I could talk to an adult without interruption.
Nice.
and hear the good news that he somehow found a way to get away from YouTube's AI taking down all of his videos.
Oh, really? I didn't know he was having trouble with that. That's good.
Yeah.
I didn't know how he could do it in the first place.
he was on the brink of being like, am I just not going to be able to do this again because robots are taking down my videos and I can't talk to a person at YouTube. But apparently something happened and it's all good. So that's good. But yeah, it was it was awesome. And, you know, just there's a lot of people that come to that panel every year now that it was good to see. So that was great.
Yeah.
Watched most of Proto Men in the hotel room that night just because, well, after that, Richard was pretty burnt out, I guess. And he was hungry and he was sad that he didn't get picked to play. Yeah, he held in his tears until the game was over, and then he started crying. Though he did know Bellatro in 2 seconds, and neither of the finalists did. So,
he must have been dying.
Yeah, if he was in the final, he would have taken a point off somebody for sure, right there. Watched Proto Men up in the room. They played some of their '80s covers that rule.
Love those.
After the show, up bright and early Saturday morning, went to the community orchestra concert, which is a fairly new thing. Dave, did you see any of that in the year? Because they definitely started it in 2023, maybe?
I never made an attempt to seek it out purposefully. I think I probably glimpsed it just crossing through the atrium at some point. And, there's so much video game music that I just am not familiar with anymore that I don't think I really stopped to listen, but like it is an impressive undertaking. It's really amazing that they all come together, probably, I don't know, rehearse once, if that.
They rehearse for people who don't know, they do an orchestra concert in the atrium of MAGFest, which is this huge atrium where it's like, it's lined with like the balconies of rooms that are suites. And there's like, the hotel restaurant is down there on the bottom floor. There's a fountain. There's like a couple of like little shops to get like ice cream and candy or whatever in there. But then there's this big open space and, the cosplayers take pictures down there. And then there's like one floor up is like where the Belvedere, like the lobby bar is. And then another floor up is the atrium walkway where like there's this gazebo and that's where a lot of the cosplayers just idle for the course of the weekend. They have like a 200-person orchestra that is made up completely of MAGFest like congoers.
Attendees
who I'm guessing, they must get the music like ahead of time or the arrangements ahead of time and start learning their parts. And then they do a rehearsal and then they do this thing where it's like each piece has a different arranger and a different conductor. And there's like, a bunch of special guests. So I didn't get to see the Crush 40 experience, because that was directly during Name That Tune, as was Bit Brigade, but I got to see the Bit Brigade show on TV. Like they were playing it immediately afterwards. So I got to see pretty much the whole thing. And I look forward to seeing them when they hopefully tour through Western New York. Johnny G of the Crush 40 experience was there to belt out the theme from Sonic and the Black Knight with an orchestra.
Something I never noticed in orchestras past was that there's also a full chorus. It's not just a complete string orchestra and brass and every, but also a full SATB chorus.
Yes.
It's crazy. They've got risers. They're all standing behind the orchestra. Yep. It's nuts.
Yep. Yeah. But you had like a composer of World of Warcraft was there to conduct a piece. There was a composer of another game. I didn't quite catch the name who was there to conduct a piece. You know, you have special guests coming in like Johnny G and Rebecca Sugar. That the closer was something from Steven Universe. Of course. Man. There was a great Mega Man medley to kick the thing off. They played the theme from Helldivers 2, which was a very meaningful moment for me this past weekend. Yeah, and it's insane. And like literally, you know, I went down there at like 8:30 to get Richard a bagel. Because they have a convenient grab and go food marketplace down there now.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, okay, we'll scope out the area while you munch breakfast and then we'll go do some other stuff and come back. But like we're sitting down there and people were coming in and like grabbing chairs and like picking out spots. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess we're going to be here.
Yeah.
And we're not moving for the next until this thing starts and is over with. So, I brought his Switch too. He was down there playing Switch and he was fine. Ready to do other stuff after that though. But yeah, that's just like one of my favorite parts of MAGFest now. It's just so cool. Even if I don't know the music, which there's a lot of arrangements that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
It's just cool to see the whole thing come together and happen. There's people in their full fursuits playing woodwind instruments in the orchestra. And people in cosplay.
I was going to say, like, this orchestra, I know it has been definitely been impressed upon me that Expedition 33, like, it was definitely very well represented in terms of cosplay. This orchestra has got to be a full 10% baguettes. Like,
probably.
I'm not shocked.
Yeah.
But also, like, it's cool for me to see people who are not necessarily professional musicians, like, for a living, but that they come together and do this hobbyist thing and, like, at this incredible level of proficiency that they can still pull together an ad hoc orchestra real quick and it sounds professional.
Yeah.
It's super impressive.
I don't know how they do it. Kind of interested in finding out and documenting it in some way. But other stuff more. Oh, I didn't mention North Shore was a game I played in the indie section. It's a game like its primary gameplay involved ice skating. It just looked really nice. I didn't post any pictures of it.
I was looking for it.
But yeah, you were controlling like this little character, like skating around on ice, and you could like jump and duck and like, you're just kind of like exploring this, this wintry environment. Some really basic stuff, but I just thought the physics of it and the movement of it were really cool.
I think I saw someone else post that one today, actually. So.
Yeah. You guys didn't play Silk Song, so blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Da, da, da. Richard playing Killer Queen with strangers.
Yeah.
Great times. Went to, looks like, yeah. So the two shows that Richard stayed in the entirety for, which I told him, I'm like, Richard, if we are staying for one show and not missing one thing, it is Proto Men Act 3. And right before that was Danimal Cannon. He was basically opening for the Proto Men.
Awesome.
And yeah, I'm like, Dan's a friend of mine, so I'd like to see that whole thing as well. We went in there and he's like, come on, dad. I'm like, you don't want to like stand further back? Cause he's very sensitive to the sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had earplugs for him, but like, he's still just very sensitive to the sound in the concert hall. And in general, kid doesn't like super loud, chaotic noises, but he was like, no, we're going up. So we were like maybe 10 people back from the stage. Dan fucking killed it. And he'll say, he put a ton of work into rehearsing it and animating a version of himself in Unreal Engine.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yes.
Oh, holy shit. That's weird.
Yes. Yes. Dan facial captured and motion captured himself and made a CG version of himself in Unreal, because he's been learning Unreal over the course of the past few years, to co-host the show with him. And it's an abomination. It's a horrible nightmare. But Yeah, you know, it was just really good show. And it's wild to think that it's like, you know, because I think we might maybe not remember Dan's like first shows at MAGFest and his like first Chip album, mm-hmm. Roots. And it's like, here's one song off of Roots. Here's like one song off his other album, a couple things from just Shapes and Beats. And then it's just like his music from other games. And when he did a cover from Doom 2016. And then otherwise it was like, you know, from Retromania Wrestling and from this other game he's worked on. And for a guy who is just a guy with a guitar and in his computer, like, man, that's all that was up on stage. And he killed it.
Damn.
Nice.
Yeah. There's your glazing, Dan. yeah. And we stayed absolutely put. And the thing, you know, Richard, like, he couldn't really see the stage very well. He could see the screen, but, like, you know, he's only 5 feet tall, so yeah. Like everyone's taller than him, but, like, he didn't want to move back.
He's 5 feet tall already? Of course he is.
If he's not 5 feet, he's very close. And yeah, act three was awesome. That was a incredible show. The Proto Men are good. Go figure. Mm-hmm. I bought a copy of Act 3 there, even though I had already ordered a copy of Act 3, but I literally couldn't wait to read the notes of the songs and see what happened for sure. Seems like maybe the story's not done at all in any way, shape, or form.
Jeez.
yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know if you guys ordered the CD version, but yeah, like
listen to it.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
But, yeah, it ends very abruptly, reading the notes. Like, it's just kind of like, oh, there's clearly, and there apparently there's some kind of like ARG, that people have, it seems like it might be like a secret double album. And if you look at the CD, it is like half of the Proto Men logo. It's like Proto. So it looks like, oh, if you had another CD that said Omen, they would go right together nicely.
Oh, man.
It's just crazy to think about when it took them the entire time I've been aware of them as a band to get Act 3 out.
Right.
So, yeah, that's presumably there is more to come. And also another super cool moment, because, you know, they end every set with every show they play by playing Do Vendetta, that song where they like name off a bunch of Mega Man bosses. Oh, yeah. And, the you know, Panther's like, we're going to end it like we always end it. And then there was like 20 seconds, but he's like, apparently we're not going to, because, you know, the past couple of years at MAGFest, they just kind of invite a bunch of people up on stage to kind of hang out with them. Well, this time those people just took over the song. So it was like Danimal and like some of the Bit Brigade guys and the singer from the Megas and RC from Cybertronic Spree.
I was just gonna I thought Cybertronic Spree was there.
Yeah, they weren't playing, but they were around in full gimmick. And like Mega Ran's up there. So there was like this impromptu, well, obviously planned super band that came together, and they played Do Vendetta while the Proto Men just like partied and jumped in the audience, and it was really cool.
Oh my god.
it was just a really cool, crazy show. MAGFest moment. Yeah, so
that's why
that was awesome. Yeah, it was really awesome. It was super cool. Also on the Thing's Not Over Yet, at the cover song they played after Act 3 was The Show Must Go On. They're one of the Queen covers, so it's like, okay, come on, guys. So yeah, the Proto Men rule. They're incredible. And then Sunday we just played a few more arcade games and had breakfast with his uncle and aunt, and then left. And it's like, when I told him, I'm like, yeah, buddy, it's time to go. You could see him like not wanting to cry.
Aww.
And I'm just like, bud, it's all gonna be gone in a few hours. Like, we gotta go, man. Then we went to the airport and our plane was delayed for like 2 hours. So we got to sit in the terminal and play some video games. And just, but we got home safe. And that's what matters. But yeah, it was super good. And just like I don't know what it was. Just the vibes the whole weekend were like super positive and friendly. Just like, I talked to several, you know, people where it was their first time MAGFest, you know, not just my tattoo artist, but like there was a girl who was sharing a bench with us for the community concert. You know, just chatting with her. Just every elevator ride was like ridiculous and fun and goofy. just, I don't know. It was just like really cool. And it was just, everyone was great. I had two complete MAGFest newbies staying with me, and they were just saying how, like, you know, this one of them, she had been to like an Otakon, and their friends that they were hanging out with had been to, like, you know, like a Katsukon and an Otakon, and they were like, yeah, this blows them out of the water. This was so good. This was amazing. And like, yeah, like their friend, I met him like right as we were going to leave on Sunday. And he was like, dude, thank you so much for, you know, helping my friends come down here. Like, cause these aren't my friends. These are my family. Like, da, 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 da. And I'm I was just like, oh, buddy, come here, bring it in.
Aww.
Like, you know, we're all family now, man. yeah. It was just great. Yeah, just people giving Richard stuff. Like, there was one elevator ride. There was a woman who was giving out little 3D printed cows to kids. And there was like this other person, like, they were dressed all in like Shadow the Hedgehog gear. And like, they gave Richard because Richard was wearing his Knuckles shirt, gave him a Knuckles Valentine with a pack of like sweet tarts.
Oh,
just like, yeah. So he had like little emergency candies to eat the whole weekend. Just, yeah, it was just like, everyone was like super nice and chill. And like, even during the concert, like, people were looking out for Richard and passing him balloons to bat around. And when a mosh pit opened up right next to us, he thought a crime was being committed and we had to leave immediately. And I'm like, no, they're having fun. Don't you worry.
That's awesome.
It was like right next to us. He was like, what the fuck is happening right now? Like, and then he enjoyed watching it. And he was like, yeah, there was this one girl in there, and she was dressed as a baguette, and she was throwing people.
Like, she was throwing people.
Oh, she was just the baguette.
She was dressed. I did. Well, no, I saw people with giant baguettes,
yes,
but not just people as bread. Yeah, no, it's like a lot of, you know, I was talking to a lot of, you know, I saw Jason and Adam kind of like on my way out. And like, yeah, they said their panels were full and they had an awesome weekend too. Like, all the old guys I talked to were like, yeah, this was like a really, really good one. Like, just crazy in 2026.
Yeah.
That, like, it was one of the best MAGFests that we had ever been to.
That's great. I'm
just like, shit. Dave's like, oh, that's great.
I'm happy for you.
Great.
No, it good really job. Like, yeah, no, I mean, I would have been too busy to go, even though, like, even to this day, I'm a little surprised that Julia still talks about wanting to go back to MAGFest. And, you know, I do feel like any day I'm like, aren't you a little too much? Aren't you too much of a teenage girl now to want to go to a video game convention with your dad? And that is still not true is just kind of nice. And like, I really kind of want to make that opportunity for her again. So,
yeah. I mean, it can happen. I have some ideas, and I want to talk to, you know, kind of the group.
All right.
Try to get people, you know, gunning for going again. Cause
yeah,
since 2020, most of the people that we hang out at MAGFest have not gone.
Yeah.
But I think that is somewhat surmountable if we try. I think it might just take some effort, but yeah, it was great. MAGFest. I still recommend it. Gonna be selling out. It sold out in November, I want to say, this past year. Like, I think in the past couple of years, it started selling out like, oh, it sold out like a couple days. It sold out like MAGFest Thursday or Friday. And then it's like, oh, it's selling out like a few days before. And then it's like the week before. And now it's like a month before, then a couple months before. So like, we're getting to the point where it's just going to be selling out like instantly. And it's just crazy. Yeah, no, I just, you know, I hear people, it's like, you know, we're staying at this hotel over there. Like, I had to get an Airbnb and come in and just blah, blah, blah. You know, people make it happen. It's not always the circumstances you want, but it's like, yeah, you know, 30,000 people get there somehow.
Good God.
Thursday when we got there, it was like, holy shit. What, like, usually I'm kind of used to getting there Thursday and it's like not too busy yet. Yeah. Usually people don't show up till Friday. This was like, Jesus fucking Christ, there's so many people here and it smells weird. it could smell better right now, everybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Just a lot of people. A lot of people. And like, yeah, you still have the thing where it's just like, yeah, there's just random music acts in the hallway and just random. I went to the tabletop building for the first time and checked that out, which is a whole other thing where it's like quiet and people are just playing board games quietly and not, being insane. But it's there. Yeah.
No, I think you're really lucky that you caught a year that was, because increasingly I think, especially in the past couple of years, we've been like, look, MAGFest is always super rad, but, I think there's definitely been years the past few times that I've been, where I've been like, this maybe wasn't the best MAGFest I've ever been to. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you truly caught a unicorn this year. And because it's so many, a confluence of circumstance that makes a MAGFest, fantastic. Mm-hmm. And a big part of it comes down to the vibe, right? Mm-hmm. Is everyone kind of being chill and just having a good time and like
being polite?
Yeah.
This was also the first year where it was a closed profile event. Like they were checking badges to get into the Gaylord building.
Oh, wow.
So you could not go into the hotel if you did not have a MAGFest badge. So there was no like lobby conning or just people coming in to visit with their friends or go to room parties. Like the way Chris Ault would come in just to kind of hang out with us. He wouldn't be able to do that. We would have to find a way to smuggle him in, like sending someone out with two badges to hand him one. Cause there was a man at every single door looking at your badge as you walked in.
Wow.
So maybe that helped with it, that you just didn't have outside people who didn't care coming in.
No rattle rousers.
Or paid
agitators.
A few fewer people, I'm sure some people figure out, it's like, oh, I can go in, I can hang out at the, I can cosplay at the fountain or cosplay in the atrium or hang out at the Belvedere bar and like listen to music there and get a lot of the vibe without, or just walk the halls, like the chip space is just in a hallway.
Yeah.
Like the jam pods are just in hallways. There's so much stuff that's just, it's not even behind a door to enjoy at a MAGFest. So I thought it was kind of ridiculous and ambitious at first, but I think that might have made a big difference.
Yeah.
I think it might have. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool.
All right. Well, I talked for an hour. So catch you guys next time. Bye.
Yeah, all right. Again. Yeah.
So Dave, you didn't watch anything? Watch or play anything?
You, Tim? Or no, you know what? Tim talked for an hour.
Yeah, I was about to say that's
let's talk about Pluribus.
That's you, Tim.
Yeah, talk about Pluribus.
Oh, did you watch it?
Sure, yes. We finished Pluribus since the last podcast.
Yeah. Didn't realize you had it did not sound like you were getting to it, so I wasn't sure.
No. We watched the whole thing. Absolutely loved it.
That ending, man.
Yeah,
that was a great last episode.
Yes, absolutely fantastic last episode. Tim, how much in depth do you want us to talk about this show? Is this?
I mean, I could just take my headphones off if you want to go at it.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't know if this is something that you wanted to watch. Do you not want to be spoiled for the premise?
You can tell me the premise, I guess. That's fine.
All right. Mm-hmm. It's a high concept sci-fi premise, similar to the way that Severance was a very high concept sci-fi premise, in that like you think you've seen this premise before, you think you know where the story is going, but because of the exact specifics of how it's done, so the sci-fi premise is that everyone on Earth becomes a hive mind, a single consciousness, except for 12 people. 12 people are unaffected by this, whatever has happened to humanity. One of these people is grumpy curmudgeon. Her name is Ray Seahorn of Breaking Bad.
Oh, Ray?
Okay. And yeah, it's pronounced Ray, which surprised me too, but I heard Vince Gilligan say it out loud and it's Ray.
All right.
Yeah. So, or maybe I heard, Bryan Cranston say it out loud. I heard one of them say it out loud.
And yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, it's, or not Bryan Cranston.
Odenkirk.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
And so she is a real Karen about it. Basically,
it's nice because they like the first episode goes through all the deets and like sets up the dominoes of
marvelous
like,
first episode too, like banger yeah. first episode.
Right. It drops all of that. All of it's very interesting and kind of a Spielberg doing exposition kind of way
yeah.
because it is interesting and it's interesting to everybody and there's stuff to react to. And then the rest of the season doesn't really have to talk about the specifics of the thing that's happening and just has a lot of like last man on earth sort of, you know, like Omega Man kind of, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm mad about it. How do I interact with this? What's happening in present time?
I think that's interesting that that's your takeaway because while I think those are the beautiful, like human emotional moments, for mm-hmm. me, it is the details of what's happening because that first episode plays out like a zombie movie, right? That first episode mm-hmm. plays out like the war of the, you know, invasion of the body snatchers. That first episode plays out like mm-hmm. the science fiction trope you expect. And then it's for the entire rest of the season, she keeps telling all the other survivors, like, we've seen this movie, you guys, come on. We know mm-hmm. how this plays out. And yet, it like the more details we learn about the specifics of how this happened and what it actually means, there's a lot of pushback mm-hmm. against it. And she's got to constantly mm-hmm. remind everybody, like, no, they're the bad guys. Your friends and family, you thought you knew, they're not those people anymore. And everyone else is like, yeah, but I don't know, they're kind of nice. And so like
it's
the specifics of and as she learns, you know, like what they mm-hmm. can and cannot do, like as she learns how this collective consciousness functions and she learns to navigate mm-hmm. and try to second guess them and try to beat them at every turn. That I thought that is what makes what would ordinarily be another mm-hmm. one of these sci-fi plots so unique and so interesting.
Like all of those details, like, are what I expected. It was just how people are reacting to them that was not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's – I always – whenever there's a faux drug episode, which you could call this, I think of the Captain N episode where they go to the amusement park and everybody is enjoying it, but they realize that it's not real life, which is what Pluribus is. In a sense, it's just sort of like, well, this is really nice. It's not real life, but it's really nice.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But like you have, you know, one-ish two people that are resistant to and then everybody else of different slices of how is this appealing to you? And it's also very easy to put AI as an analog over the top of this as well.
Yeah.
So, which I'm betting will be even more obvious in the next season, given how the world has gone.
But just a devastating Ray Seahorn, as she did in Better Call Saul, is one of the most just emotionally devastating actors out there who can do so much by doing so little because she trades in these characters who are absolutely desperate to not make a real human connection for fear of being hurt.
Mm-hmm. And I love, I don't remember the, Zosia, was it Zosia? The,
Zosia.
The way she plays basically robot or basically alien is like in a slightly different way than I've seen. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, again, the way you play that different kind of intelligence is, you know, such an interesting. Yeah, it is bizarre, and it's weird how the shades of AI, like when you think it through, like no, this is an intelligence that knows everything, and so you know when they respond to you, it's an amalgamation of both their personal response to you and pooling the knowledge of the sum of humanity. So,
yeah. And you can do some, you know, setting it up like this makes it feel easy. I'm sure it was very hard to get to those spots, but you can go like, okay, you've got the collective knowledge of everyone you've ever blah, blah, blah. Okay. So someone's going to love you. Is that love? Is this that? I have a lot of fun. You know, we know that Vince Gilligan started on X-Files, and he said that this is his most, you know, like return to, and it does. It feels like those really good, like the best not monster of the week, but not main story X-Files, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's funny to me, too, how while in Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, the city of Albuquerque really, like, becomes a character in the show. It's such a, you know, like the culture of that place is so, it gets so many opportunities to shine. Whereas because this is a last person on earth, you know, quote unquote scenario, that doesn't really exist here. But even then, Albuquerque is like, it's so beautifully shot. Like they find so many opportunities to use that landscape and that geography to enhance the sense of isolation.
Yeah. Follow me on this, because I had this thought, and it's also rather obnoxious, but I was looking at the way that he loves New Mexico and is shooting that. It felt like Romero, in the way that Romero is very good at claustrophobia in Pittsburgh. I feel like Vince Gillen is good at agoraphobia in New Mexico.
Oh, that's like, an interesting thought.
Where it's like the fear of tight spaces for zombie movies and the fear of these wide open spaces, especially because he hasn't done horror since he's been showrunner. But like,
but he's absolutely done these moments of high intensity danger where like the danger could be coming from any direction.
Exactly.
Because you are vulnerable, because there's nowhere to hide.
Right. Like those drone, you know, coming in from wherever.
Yeah.
Like the second that they introduce that as a concept is like, it's eerie.
It is. Yeah. And they're like, no, get an umbrella so that we can talk and they can't see us.
Oh, I loved that.
Yes.
That was great, too. I can't wait to see. Like, I assume this is his first English language project. I haven't done a deep dive.
Neither have I. No.
But fucking won't be your last.
Yeah. I assume. Yeah, for real.
I'm assuming like he's got a lot to do in season two, hopefully. But yeah, no, I was,
yeah, absolutely
front to back, very happy with, as someone who only watched like a season and a half of Better Call Saul. Like I
really, you know,
yep. I mean, like, it was certainly good, but I did not get the same hook that I had for Breaking Bad or this. And I need to go back. It could be where I was.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Too.
I mean, like, hour long prestiges are the hardest things for me to sit down with at this point. Like, I might get to Andor again, as I've been saying for months and months and months, just concentrating on. Yeah, it's good though, and it's really funny. Obviously,
oh my gosh, yeah, yeah. So many just of those moments of absolute ridiculousness that Vince Gilligan is really good at.
I mean, you say that about this scenario all the time when it works, but it's all those like little human reactions you didn't expect, but the second someone does it, you're like, yeah, that's how I would have reacted.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. It feels real. It feels true. And it's also surprising and funny.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff.
Good-ass job. Love the all the songs on the credits, which is up on streaming, by the way. I've done a deep dive on a couple of those.
Yeah, it took me a few episodes to realize, it's always like a cover of a song in French? Is it always in French, or are there multiple languages?
No, there's multiple languages, and they're not always covers, mark? I got to double check. I mean, People Are Strange was the first one I paid attention to.
That probably, and then, me too, yeah.
Yeah. And that artist, I think that was Kit Sebastian. There were a couple really good albums from a couple of those too.
Yep. Super great. Love it.
Super good.
TV-wise?
That's the only TV on my list, but we are, now that we've finished Pluribus Weas, I've convinced Jan to be excited about starting watching The Lowdown.
Ah, nice. I'm so curious how you feel our next about watch. That. Yeah, those are, I mean, those are the two best, like, drama isn't really the right word, I guess, because they're both really funny, but, you know, dramedies. So, you know, like, comedies with like high, you know, like acting moments.
Yeah.
Don't rely on the comedy. No. I love watching Sterling Harjo, like post anything. It felt like it was a really good year for Ethan Hawke. I still did not get to see Blue Moon, but, I would be shocked if that doesn't, I don't think people have done nominations and already, and again, fuck the Oscars, but I'm sure he will get, he should be on there for supporting it. I think it's, I don't know if it's leading or supporting because I haven't seen it, but, TV wise, nothing there. Just been comfort watching, DuckTales 2017 because that show is great. Watching that again. Trying to get back to the moon. But saw that Bone Temple. That's good. This is a good. So this is 28 years later, The Bone Temple. So this is 28 days later, part 4 at this point. Directed by Nia DaCosta, that had done Candyman and the Marvels and her own projects beforehand. Still written by Alex Garland, that wrote the original. As well as 28 years later. I skipped 28 weeks later. And everybody that I've ever talked to is like, yeah, that's fine.
Didn't 28 years later just come out last year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Was this filmed concurrently?
This is a trilogy at this
point. Yes, there's another one coming. Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Oh, I did not know this.
I didn't know going into 28 years later, obviously when that movie ends, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Similarly with this one. I liked 28 years later, like, better. I think that was a movie that, like, I saw it and I was like, that was good. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, because it does such a good job of, like, the original is iconic and bombastic. And, you know, like you say, 28 days later, you know exactly the feeling, the look, the texture, the speed, and 28 years later is a slower, more kind of thoughtful movie. And at first you're like, is it not doing enough? And it's weird because it's all filmed on iPhones, but it's gorgeous and he's doing really interesting stuff with it. All you need to know.
I mean, Danny Boyle came back and directed 28 years, right?
Yeah, he did 28 years. Yep. Nothing to do with the characters in the original.
No.
So this one, 28 years later, introduced, it's basically the characters that you're following, and they run into Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
The Bone Temple is mainly about Ralph Fiennes, who, go figure, very good actor. it is, a lot of it is Ralph Fiennes interacting with one of the infected. You could easily kind of compare it to Day of the Dead in that sense. Day of the Dead was the one where they had Bub the zombie that they were experimenting on, that Shaun of the Dead played with at the end, and all of that stuff. There were a couple things that, like, kind of bugged me like internal logic-y wise between these two movies, but it's the best that I've seen of Nia DaCosta in the mainstream, like, spotlight, especially since she horror director that's only been doing, like, franchises at this point, and obviously this is another one, and she is very good at action. This one is not one to bring Richard to. It is a very gory movie.
Weird.
Yeah, somehow. 28 years later had a baller soundtrack. This one was fine, but definitely both worth checking out. I was seeing that, like, Bone Temple didn't do great opening weekend, but I've seen so many people talking about it. I'm hoping it gets like a slow word of mouth kind of rollout at this point. And they have to make the third one. Like there was something on Fangoria's just like, I don't know, wasn't getting enough support. And I'm just like, they'll figure it. It's in the middle.
They already were making it.
They probably are in the middle of it, but it is tenuous enough these days that it's like, I could see anything getting canceled, but my biggest quibble, someone else mentioned at work and it was on my mind too, is like one of the characters from 28 years into Bone Temple like really takes a back seat, and like that felt weird to just be like, oh, okay. Like they couldn't find a way to like make them more a part of the story actively, I suppose. But they're definitely worth checking if you're interested at all. Yeah. Danny Boyle, still a very good director, like sneaky. We don't talk a lot about these days. Really good director. I'm not sure if he's coming back for the third one. It would be cool if they work together. I would love, that would be a fun way to, or they take it in a completely different thing. Like, I think that was one of the reasons I didn't want to see 28 Weeks is that it felt like it was going to be trying to do the first movie, and 28 Years is such a departure from the originals, which makes it feel good. And yeah, you know, I didn't get to see, I'll probably see tomorrow, but did you ever see, I always forget the original name of the movie, but it got rebranded as Live, Die, Repeat, the Tom Cruise movie.
Edge of Tomorrow.
So that was based on a manga with a much better title called All You Need Is Kill, which is an anime that's out in theaters right now. So
yeah, I've heard that.
That looks great.
I think the headline I saw is that like, you know, the Tom Cruise movie was great, and this might be an even better adaptation. So that's really cool.
Yeah. Like, it's something that came up a lot at the time, and I said the same thing of just like, it's the best video game movie that's not based on a video game. Yeah. Has all those mechanics and all that. So
I heard someone say it would make a great roguelike.
I mean, it is.
And
I mean,
they made it. It is.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't know. That's one of those things where like it's obvious enough. If they actually did it, it would be so fucking boring.
it just makes me think of Returnal. I mean, I know that's Edge of Tomorrow is aliens, is it not? So
yep.
Yeah, so it's alien. I mean, it's obviously different, but that
yeah
whatever.
And I wasn't sure what we were doing on time, so I had suggested if we wanted to talk about stuff that's coming out next year. So that's kind of on your guidance. But did you watch or play or
anything? I have a few things to talk about.
I guess I have a game too. But
No, I did. I actually have been playing quite a few different things. Where did my list go? So I didn't forget any. Excuse me. Yeah, the day after we recorded our game of the year, I finished Death Stranding 2. That game was awesome. It was, you know, insane at the end. Loved it. I mean, it was high on my list at the time. That's all good. I played The Root Trees Are Dead. This is you know, where you use words like Oberdin in Golden Idol. It is a investigation game where you are doing a genealogical investigation into this family tree of the root trees, who, you know, own this like mega candy corporation. And, you know, it's this huge family with, you know, kind of in, you know, you're uncovering family secrets and connections and how this whole like weird family works together and trying to name people and pull out their pictures and stuff. The main investigation mechanism is 1998 internet. It's like it's a fake 1998 internet. So you're using a search engine to put in stuff to try to find articles about the root trees and get information about them. And then, you know, you have like a book resource and a magazine resource as well.
that you can use to find this stuff out. It's another really, I heard about this came out like early last year and I heard about it. And I don't know why when I hear about these games, I'm always like, I don't need to play that right away. And then I play it and I'm like, oh, that was fucking great. And it was great. It was really good. There were a couple moments. I mean, it has a good hint system in there where they'll just kind of tell you the things you need to like search. There are moments where I was, you know, trying to find information about like certain members of the family and like kind of the connections I had to make to get there, to get that information were a little like, okay. It was like, I would never be thinking of searching this thing to get this information. I wouldn't be thinking about this at all. But it's just, I guess, just a measure of being thorough and it gives you hints and clues and stuff and it's fine. And most of it I figured out on my own, including the big kind of secret extra mystery at the end, which was not that hard to figure out in my opinion. But yeah, I put that all together on my own. So yeah, good game. Root Trees Are Dead.
You're so smart.
Yeah, I'm so smart. my child got Lego Party for Christmas. Lego Party. So this is a party game that came out last year that is Lego themed. It, you know, it's like Mario Party in the sense that like, oh, you know, you're playing mini games, you're going around a board, mm-hmm. you're getting golden bricks. Whoever has the most golden bricks wins, except that like, I don't know, Lego Party kind of rules. It's a lot of fun. And Mario Party is infuriating and takes too long. Like last year he got Jamboree. We played Jamboree and just like, these take forever. And, you know, it's so easy to get just moving around the board and the characters yapping and like these events that come up. And, you know, there's this huge swings to the game state and everyone can get fucked over every which way at the end. But like Lego Party, like the games are a lot of fun. Like it's breezy. It's much faster paced. It's a thing where it's like we're coming up on the end of the game and I'm like, oh, it's almost over. Like, damn, like I'm not ready to be done yet. Whereas Mario Party, you come up on halfway and you're like,
you're like, all right, come on.
Oh my God. Hell, we got to do another half of this. No, Lego Party is a lot of fun.
Cool. Wow.
You know, when we were in the airport, I was like, dude, you want to play a Lego Party? We got time. And it was like, yeah, sure. And we played some Lego Party. Probably going to do a Lego Party tomorrow. I haven't played in a bit. Huh. Yeah. So like, yeah, if you're looking for a game to actually fun party game, look into Lego Party. I think it's only $40.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Pretty good. My kids only just got interested in Mario Party this past, I think around last year, this time last year. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we were playing it for a while and yeah, like for what kept me going on it was the nostalgia, was those memories of those good times. But yeah, all the problems that you just cited are absolutely true. So this is interesting.
Yeah, especially modern Mario Party, I feel like wears out its welcome way too early. Every time that I've played in the last few years.
We
had a decent
time, but it's just like, it's just they never have been like, oh, we should make the game move a little faster and like maybe be a little more fair. And, you know, just keep it moving. And Lego mm-hmm. Party does that stuff and has ways of keeping it interesting and just moving it along. And, and it's one of the things that, you know, in Mario Party, you play the mini game at the end of the turn. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you get your coins and like whatever. And you decide the turn order at the start of the game. In Lego Party, you play the mini game at the start of the turn and your placement in the mini game determines your turn order for the next round.
Oh,
so you can do a thing. Well, it increases stakes when it's like, oh, if there's two people who are kind of near the golden brick, like you really want to win that mini game. Mm. So that you'll go first and you'll be able to get the brick. Or you want to win the mini game so you can, you know, if there's somebody on the other side of the map, you want to be able to use an item or do something to try to disrupt them. You want to go before this. So it puts extra stakes on those mini games from time to time. Yeah, it's just cool. It's just good.
Nice.
Yeah, it was. We had a good time with it. Just kind of blazing through here on the Steam Deck, I have been bouncing back and forth between a game called Megabonk,
yeah,
which you may have heard of, which is a kind of a 3D version of Vampire Survivors.
Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with Bonk.
Right. No,
nothing to do with Bonk.
No, confusingly, no. Yes, nothing to do with Bonk. I grabbed this during the winter sale, but haven't played it yet.
Yeah, no, you'll probably have a great time with it.
Yeah.
Because it's Vampire Survivors, but unlike, I played a little bit of Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, that had been recommended to me. I heard it was very good. And I didn't really get that into it. I played a few runs and I was kind of like, all these, I'm picking up the same guns and kind of getting the same power ups. And like, there's some interesting ideas there, but it wasn't really like grabbing me. But Mega Bonk, right away, it's like, okay, these are, it starts out, a round is 10 minutes, which is a lot, so we're moving along there. And then like they can progress to be longer than that as you go through different stages. But, it's three dimensions. So you have to take into account things like height and there's hills and valleys and it has enough different stuff going on that it feels good and is fun to play despite the fact that it's littered with like a lot of dumbass internet humor, but somehow it's kind of endearing and not like offensive when it should really be like really just be off-putting. It's just kind of funny when I pick up the thunder gloves that make the enemies cheeks clap so hard that it sends out a shockwave. Like every time I snicker, I'm like, that's just so brazenly stupid. I can't be mad at it. Yeah, it's super fun. Best non-Vampire Survivors I've played. And the other game is Sectori, which is...
Yes, everyone was talking about this right before Christmas.
Yes, this is a Geometry Wars roguelite deal. It feels... I really like Geometry Wars
2. Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like right up your alley.
Yeah, I played a lot of Geometry Wars 2 back in the day. And, despite so many other games coming along trying to emulate the Geometry Wars style or just being a twin stick shooter in general, nothing has really scratched that itch quite the same until this, which feels and looks awesome. It's really good. I don't know if I'm going to have like the super pull to do like score chasing with it, or I'm just going to kind of settle in and just kind of like, I'm just going to try to play through and beat runs and try different power up setups. It has a Gradius like power up system where you pick up items and like it moves up through different ranks. So you'll need like four of them to get a shield or whatever, or five of them to upgrade your missiles or what have you, which, I also like Gradius. So, fits a nice room, but yeah, it has a bunch of different modes, lots of stuff to do in there. It came out like in November. I just kind of grabbed it because I wanted a little something for playing on the plane to MAGFest, even though I had other games to play.
But just a quick pick up and play arcade style game.
Yes, very much so. Which Megabonk could have been, but I was like, little something for Tim. okay, so what I've spent, I don't know. Probably the most time since we last talked is I have played and finished Metroid Prime 4 Beyond.
Oh, wow.
Metroid Prime 4 Beyond. You'll remember that I had not played much of it when last we spoke during the awards, and I gave it the pledge for its strongest opening. And if I had played it more, it also would have gotten the turn for going... downhill from there.
Oh man,
that's a bummer.
It is a bummer. It's
I was hoping that was going to be a surprise in the other direction for you.
Yeah, I wish. Well, it does start out strong. I think like the opening is you land on a like Galactic Federation base that's like under attack, and it's a little Halo-y, and then you get teleported to a planet on the other side of the galaxy. And, you're going through this lush jungle area and like with the music and like it's a really graphically rich environment. It's like, oh, this feels really good. We are so fucking back. And then you leave that area.
And motherfuckers start jabbing their jaws at you.
That's not the problem. That is a problem at times, but it's not like the problem. So it's mean to say this game is bad, and I don't think it's bad. And, you know, obviously this game was in development hell for a long time. They announced this like when the Switch 1 was coming out, and then we got it now after the Switch 2 came out. So it went, you know, other people have said this, it looks like, oh, they were trying to do like Breath of the Wild, like Mario Odyssey, but for Metroid. And what you get is this big open desert area in the middle, which the main areas of the game spoke off of. And the desert sucks real bad. It's terrible. And you just drive across it for most of the game. And like, not until basically the end is there stuff you have to do there. And it's very obvious where those things are because, you know, it's a desert. So when there's a thing that's not sand, that's where a point of interest is. But then it's like you go into these areas and, you know, that spoke off. So that way, you know, it's like desert in the middle. And then it's like, oh, there's a super green area over here. And then you'll go off to this like this forge where they make the bikes that, you know, you get and ride around on. And then there's like an ice area over here, and there's a volcano over here, and there's a mine over here. And it's very much, you go into an area and every room has two doors, the one you just came through and the one you need to go out. There's not a lot of twisty, interconnecty, oh, I have this item so I can take this shortcut now between areas.
Yeah.
Because even, and this is even within those zones, you know, in Metroid Fusion, which kept you very siloed kind of early on in the game, eventually you break out of that and you, these zones are interconnected. You kind of bust through from one to the next.
Yeah.
These are so disparate. You never can do that. And you have to go and revisit them, but you have to do that by like getting on your bike and driving over them. And then you go in, you look at the map and like, okay, where's the area that's grayed out? Cause that's obviously where I need to go to pick up an item so I can progress somewhere else. And yeah, just the areas are just pretty boring. They're just, there's moments where it's like, okay, this is decent. You know, this is good. The whole game plays well, like controlling Samus, shooting, rolling into a ball, like all that shit still feels like fucking great. Like it did in Metroid Prime. It's just the construction of the world is not very interesting to engage with. It's just like, okay, you know where you need to be. You just came from there. You need to go there. If you need an answer to anything, you scan it and the game will tell you more or less what you need to do or what you need to hit it with in order to interact with this machine or whatever. And then you do it and you go through the area and then you fight the boss and you get, you know, one of five keys you need to get, which I feel like I had a key before I even knew I needed them. And then you leave and you go somewhere else. And that's kind of like, oh, sometimes you have to go after each area, you got to like go revisit the other areas. And it's like, okay, I got to go do one thing. And there's like places where they are really graphically impressive and like, oh, this looks really good. And there are rooms that are like really interesting to go through. But I think, you know, the first area, whatever, the green air, Fury Green and Ice Belt were like my favorites. When you're in the lava area, which I think is called Lava Pool, there are two characters there. One's like a super Samus, like fangirl, and that's like fine, but they have, it's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. But there's doors where you need one of the NPCs to open it with you. A lot of these doors, and you have to walk up and push the button on one side, and then they have to come up and push the button on the other side. And it's just time consuming. It's not snappy of, because they want to make sure you and the NPC both get through the door. And that's how they figured out how to do it. Cause they couldn't just have them go through a door that you zapped open on the other side. Also, never want to hear the words frag out in a Metroid game. Doesn't sound right. I don't like it.
I've never heard that phrase and I don't like it already.
Yeah. That's something you hear in like Call of Duty.
Yeah.
You know, or if you're a hell diver, sure. Why not? It's okay there. Metroid, it just felt like, ugh, just,
yeah.
Like, ugh. Right. And then the last area, the Great Mine, is just bad. It's just it's just a series of rooms where you fight like these alien monsters. Like you go into a room and then like a bunch of them will come out and you shoot them and kill them. And then you move on to the next room. There is like no puzzles or figuring out where you need to go. It's just room, kill some things, next room, kill some things. Don't use missiles because that will call out more creatures, even though your other guns are also loud. There's not like, you know, the whole thing is built around like, oh, you get this psychic armor and you do psychic that you have a psychic shot that you can control. And then it's like, well, you have the psychic spider ball and psychic grappling hook and psychic this and that. It's just like kind of your usual Sam's like Metroid powers. Yeah, there's not much that stands out. You get elemental beam weapons, that, you know, are needed to activate certain puzzles, but for the most part, they just do more damage to enemies. Like one could see a world where, you know, one way or the other, they wanted to drop you into the world and just give you, okay, you're going to go in with these elemental shots and you're going to be able to use those to solve puzzles to go anywhere you want to go. Or maybe they were going to give you like all these psychic abilities right off the bat. And you were going to be able to go wherever you wanted to go and kind of explore at your leisure. And this just, it just didn't work out. And then when it's time to go and do the last thing, you have not one, but two collectathons you need to do. Cause you have to piece back together this giant mech to break a barrier, and you have to collect a bunch of green crystals because you need to. And boy, is it a lot of green crystals. It's so many green crystals, which is a lot of just slamming into crystals with your bike out in the desert. It's a dull, it has moments where it's like, yeah, Metroid, which is how I got through it. But it's got so many stretches where it's just very dull. It's just the dullest Metroid that it could possibly be. And it's a real bummer because it looks great. It plays great. But just the construction of the world and the levels is so unfortunately uninteresting that it's like, ugh.
That's a bummer.
It's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess if we're transitioning just very quickly, I haven't found something to play at the moment, but I have dropped off of a couple things very quickly. I'm sure they're fine. Thank you kindly for lending me a few games. Street Fighter V just did not click with. It was like 6 I had a lot of fun with. 5, holy
5
shit.
Is not considered to be a great Street Fighter, I don't believe.
Like, yeah. Like, I don't feel, like, awful. I just didn't, like, I blew through, like, 3 or 4 of the story modes, and, like, the writing in that game is so hilariously bad. Like, the tutorial at the beginning is, like, 2000s era N64 translation writing. BlazBlue story mode goes on forever. Terrible, terrible. And I'm just like, no. And I tried.
Wait, is that like the main story mode? There's like, because there's the short story modes, and then there's like the longer story mode that has a name in that game, I thought.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I got.
It was to probably that. The shorter ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they were very short. And I, you know, modern fighting games, I just don't like the artifice of everything driving you to playing online and like the way things are laid out and all that. So I didn't poke around a ton.
It's Street Fighter V is like one of the most guilty of that because it basically launched with, I don't even think it launched with an arcade mode. Right? Yeah, there was no arcade mode. It had like those very quick story modes and you could play like, you know, versus against a computer, but it didn't have arcade mode.
Right.
Yep.
I had a great time playing 6 with you guys.
Yep, 6 is great. Six, they address some issues.
Yeah. And a game that I think is really well made that I've tried a couple times. I'm like, I want to try Cadence of Hyrule again. I just don't click with that game whatsoever. I can't get anywhere with that. listen to the soundtrack. It's great. But I like 2 things. One, the longer one did beat Clair Obscur. Obviously, we've talked about it plenty at this point. I hadn't gotten to spoiler side of things too much, even before the game of the year or blink of the year for us at that point. mostly, like, I was ready to push back. Anytime I know a thing is going to happen, my imagination is doing the scenarios. And, like, I could have assumed that we were... this is super spoilery if you have not played Warning.
Speak plainly. Like,
yes, 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 yes.
If you want to hit, if you want to hit that forward button a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Being in a painting, I could have guessed, but it tying into the story. Specifically, the way that it did, and just the game's constant want to be sad across the board, I appreciated. Even though, boy, that game wanted me to accept Verso as the main character, and he was not. He was a guy that joined my party late. I'm sorry, buddy. I'm sorry. That was Mael and Lune's story. So, sure. When that, no, obviously, really enjoyed. I got to that last fight so incredibly overpowered that they did not touch me. I was done in like one round, I believe. I could not believe how fast that was. I was ready for it to be a thing.
You can get so overpowered so fast in Act 3.
And, like, I wasn't going, you know, like, I was obviously poking my head at any place that didn't have danger in it, except for Verso's first drafts, because I had to walk around that, because that was great. That was just...
I haven't gotten to look at that yet. I re-downloaded the game. I haven't gone into it yet.
Oh, was that a late addition or something?
That was DLC that was added at the Game Awards.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep.
That makes sense. Yeah, a couple of those areas. Like, I assumed Renoir's drafts, which I did not go into, is also...
Those were there. That was there before. That's like the...
Oh.
That's the last super dungeon with, like, the hardest boss at the bottom of it.
Gotcha.
I bounced right out of there. I poked around there a little bit, and I think that's where my characters unfortunately are, and I need to get the hell out.
No.
Gotcha. Well, it was like I was getting, so, even at the end, they give you like five game-breaking fucking Pictos, like right there. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, I don't even need to equip these, but I'm going to because I'm here. And yeah, as I said, like this game within the game, like Mael could have, done some terrible things. I still would have chosen her path at that point. And having watched both, I still enjoyed both for what they are. I know that Verso's is assumably the true quote unquote ending at this point.
So
I'm not entirely sure.
But so I think what we were dancing around when we were trying to, when Tim and I were telling you about this, you know, during our award show, and I think something that, only hearing your experience with it is kind of settling into my brain now, is that part of that unsettledness of this game that I really like is that I don't know that I really got the feeling that the game was trying to push that Verso was the main character, or if I did, I felt like it was a deliberate, it was meant to make me feel deliberately conflicted.
I will specifically say the game, before Verso shows up, and even a little bit, I think, when he does, your person that is leading the party is always the last person that was leading the party. When Verso shows up, Verso is leading, and I have to switch to Lune every time. So it felt like they were like, this is about him, you know, like...
But I think that's Monoko deliberate.
Is there in relation to... Yeah, no, I think it's on purpose.
Yeah, well, but absolutely. But I think it's on purpose for almost in a subversive way, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Because I think I think the game, it's almost a misdirect that the game endears you so hard to Gustav, only to have him to kill him off, and then posit this sort of like, I'm similar to Gustav, but a little more edgelordy.
Oh, I absolutely gave him the haircut because I thought it was the weirdest thing that they gave me Gustav's hair as a choice. So I'm just like, oh, you're wearing this the entire game. Yes.
Yeah, I did that too. And so then when like Act 3, like that almost felt like, okay, we're following this man who's the most wonderful man in the world.
And then we're going to come to act two, where it's, okay, the most wonderful man in the world dies, but we're going to replace him with a guy who's similar, but like super cool. He's like your super cool uncle that comes out. But then by act three, it's like, no, look, you guys, it was never really about those dudes. The hero of the story was the girl the whole time. And I feel like once you get to act three, that I feel like that's when the game purposefully decides, like, no, 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 those were misdirects.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I had a degree of, I don't know, it just felt like, to me, I'm just like, oh, there's a little, this game's a little sexist. It keeps wanting the guy to lead this party. You know, your stock video game,
right.
White guy sort of thing. And yeah, when it opened up, all of that stuff was super interesting and sad and all that.
Because she really does that sort of paladin turn, you know, it's almost, you almost kind of think that the Cecil, Dark Knight Cecil becoming paladin is the Gustav Verso change, but it's really not. It's Mael in act three. Mm-hmm.
Well, for me, it's not even the story beats as much as it recontextualizes the game, which is
yes, like, it does.
Completely. Yeah, good lord.
Like, you know, I know what you were saying about it, like doing the Chrono thing, but even like Chrono is more, it's not linear, but it's still like story sort of, the drama is linear.
Yes.
Whereas like, once that drops, you're immediately thinking back to like everything you did.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Even going like, okay, I didn't, this makes sense. That little thing that was in your head that you didn't think of, and like all of that, which is great. And even stuff that I didn't know until watching like breakdown videos, when I watched the other video, you know, Baby Verso with, what's his name? Your ship. It starts with an E.
Eske.
Yeah, Eskier, he's got the little Eskier figure or plushie.
Yeah.
Apparently Monaco was his dog. I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
Didn't even catch that.
But
and all of that stuff's super interesting. Ultimately, still, it would have fallen apart if that combat wasn't so fucking addicting. Like, that is what kept me going the entire time.
Yeah. So good.
Super good game. And only other thing I got is...
just a couple things. I saw, you know, obviously, there was an overwhelming number of baguettes at MAGFest. There was a few people in full expedition gear. I did see one old man Renoir in an elevator. Fuck else was I going to say about this game?
Eskier.
Yeah.
You saw the Eskier. Fantastic Eskier cosplay. Ooh,
yeah. Somebody cool. In an Eskier cosplay. Yeah, that was, you know, the thing was like, and you know, I asked him to take a picture and he just bounced his head. I'm like,
slap his belly.
I think they did a good job with the endings, because obviously that's very contentious in the fan base, is who was right, who was wrong.
Like, oh, I didn't realize that there was even debate. I assumed everybody went the
that's is a very heated point of is which one is good or bad or intended or whatever. Because there's a lot of people who just hated Verso and they're like, no, fuck this guy. I don't trust him. He lied a bunch.
It's also a
figment of Verso. It's not real Verso.
Yeah, it's an avatar.
He becomes a pitiable character by act three.
Yeah. That's what gets me in. And yeah, cause it's Verso as his mother has, you know, painted him. Like, his ability is that he is perfect. Like,
oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. See, you kept saying like perfect guy. I'm like, I never got him as like that.
Gustav is the perfect guy. Gustav is the man among men. Gustav is Ned Stark. You know, he's the paragon of virtue when you look up to.
Yeah.
Oh,
but yeah, okay. But you know, Verso's whole ability is based around his perfection.
Yeah.
And you know, Aline, she didn't paint her family as they are. It's her perception. And she's, you know, everybody, the whole family is an asshole on some level. I think at least a little bit, maybe not, you know, Alicia and Clea who were just dealing with it. But, you know, she in her in Aline's grieving in this painting, she repaints her family. She still makes Alicia burned and mute. Like she's still so mad at Alicia for losing her perfect son. And and Clea is just like, fuck this, I'm out of here. Yeah, and Renoir just, you know, can't leave her alone and has to, I mean, who knows how long she was in the painting, but he has to go in there, but, no, I need to get my family back. I need to get, you know, I she's been in there too long. I, you know, she needs to come out and come to grips with reality where he could just, you know, give her that time, give her a longer amount of time, however long that was, because it seems like time passes differently within the painting versus outside the painting. Yeah. But, you know, he had to, nope. Woman, you got to get out of there. You've been in there too long. We need to move on with our lives.
That was definitely helped on the motivation of decision as well. The controlling nature thereof.
Yeah. It's tough. You know, you're seeing a snippet of everything. Who knows? But yeah, that was just like in the end for me, it was like, okay, Verso seems, you know, it's less believing in Verso and more just like, okay, his way is accepting his own death.
Yeah.
Which seems
it's reality versus
in the game. And the way he's like begging that he doesn't want to live like this in Alicia's is just like, ooh. And the way that she's puppeting everyone in hers is just, ooh. It's just, oh,
it's unsettling.
Really, yeah, but
it's unsettling.
Her death was unsettling in his too, though. I forget, like, her last sentence, even though obviously going back to quote unquote reality at that point,
it's in his though, you know, you feel bad for CL and Lune cause they're just like gone by characters.
Yeah. Exactly. I might
have deep dicked along the way.
Weird choice. That was even an option to have in that game.
They could have not done that.
I was so glad that, Lune sitting down and being furious at Verso was the best part of watching that ending.
Yeah.
For sure. She is correct. Just great. Mad.
They did great things on both sides of it, and it's great.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Checked out that they did that update for Animal Crossing on Switch, so booted up the island. Yeah,
because my island is trapped on a Switch that doesn't work.
I haven't done it, but part of this update is the option to level everything and start over with Mr. Resetti showing up. So there is that. And I haven't even poked around like all the new stuff because it's Animal Crossing, and I'm just like, well, all right, I'm going to get rid of the roaches. I'm going to pick the weeds. I'm going to talk to everybody, clean out my mailbox as if it's my fucking email. Taking forever to do that. Mm. All of these wonderful menial tasks.
Violet's been so looking forward to this update. She right away, like, she's been time skipping in order to, you know, see all the stuff as soon as.
Boy.
I haven't done that, but they added a hotel that you can decorate rooms, like guest rooms for other people. And that I am excited to make some nightmares for. That should be wonderful.
And that's how you unlock the video games, right? The consoles, the game consoles.
What?
Yes, it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, the return of playable game consoles.
Because you definitely need to play Clue Clue Land and Ice Climbers within Animal Crossing.
I mean, it was more fun than just pulling up a list. know?
I know.
And you can
exclusive games. Unfortunately, so far there's no games that aren't already available on Switch Online, but
yeah, that would have been smart.
Yeah. And there's two F-Zeros.
Weird.
Like, I think there's the Super NES version and the Super Famicom version, I think.
Yep. Are both. Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hadn't seen No, I hadn't seen shit about it. No, I have seen nobody post about it. But yeah, you can, they also added a kitchen. So now you can cook instead of just make furniture. Oh. I don't know what to do with the food aside from like give, because they gave me like, you know, a cake for my birthday, which, you know, it's January, but I had like two of those in my mailbox, as well as like an anniversary cake. And I'm like, what do I do with those? So I just gave it to my neighbors. And I'm guessing that's all I'm going to do if I make food is great. Just, I only have a couple. Yeah. There's only like two neighbors that I actually like. I think that's the problem with my island. but it's neat to pop in as, much like 2020 when the world's doing great. Animal Crossing is a fun place to, disappear.
Fun place to visit, yeah.
But yeah, mostly I put like, 70 to 80 hours in Clair Obscur, so that's definitely the most that I have done, and rightly so. Yeah, I was very happy that like they didn't shoehorn the characters that weren't, you know, like Ciel and Lune, and I guess Gustav didn't all go to the same college or something. You know what I mean? Like they are removed. They are literally just there. They didn't like shoehorn them in, you know. Because I feel that would have, if this was a U.S. game, if this was a Western developed game, I think they would have forced some connection thereof. And yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
That's what I got for games. Dave, did you play?
Yeah. I've done nothing but play games. not done nothing, but when all my girls returned to school. And I can afford to treat myself to a little daytime video game playing. That's what I've been doing. There's four games that I've played that I've really enjoyed. Two of them are specifically recommendations from Aaron Randolph. One of those is Dragon Quest III HD 2D.
I played some of that.
I only played a little bit because Julia has completely taken it over. And that's the reason why I bought it, is because as Aaron Randolph described it to me, it sounds like the closest Dragon Quest to Dragon Quest IX, which is the only RPG she truly loves. And this one specifically has a lot of the same features that you go to Patty's party planning place and assemble your party of no name people. Like that is what Julia wants from this game.
I got to see the difference between Seeds of Salvation and the HD 2.5.
Okay.
Because I can't even remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't know how many functional differences there are necessarily, because this is the first time I've ever played Dragon Quest III in any iteration. So she is totally hogging that. So I have not played much of it, but she's sinking hours into it, which is why I bought it. Good for her. And the other one, Aaron Randolph recommendation, when he sold me his Steam Deck, he told me, play the game Infernax. Which is a game that I had heard of, that I had seen, like, okay, this is sort of an 8-bit Castlevania-ish throwback game. It's a platformer released in 2022, and I didn't think much of it at the time, and I think reviews were kind of middle of the road, where, like, 7s, 8s, like, yeah, this game's fine. It's a perfectly fine 8-bit,
you know, throwback. If it's not the middle of the road, I just have to note, that is at the higher end of the road.
Higher, middle of the road in terms of good. Like, between the threshold of bad, a 5 and a 10, like, it's not a bad game, but in terms of being a good game, it's middle of the road.
Well, only because that means it's more interesting to me, because usually the it's good or it's bad is... like, oh, okay.
Well, I think a lot of the thrust of reviews at the time were like, look, it's no Shovel Knight. And to be fair, it's not really trying to do what Shovel Knight did. Shovel Knight was taking that aesthetic and a hodgepodge of gameplay styles and making something that still felt fresh and new and kind of completely its own thing, even while it borrowed specific elements from other things. Infernax is specifically trying to be Castlevania 2. Mm-hmm. And it really succeeds. Tim, I know that Programancer, the developer Programancer, once again showed off his Castlevania 2-ish game, the Transylvania Adventures of Simon Quest, or whatever mouthful name he's given that game, which I tried at the last MAGFest that I went to and liked it a lot. Infernax really does a great job. Infernax really is like... If what you want is a Castlevania 2 that works, a Castlevania 2 with the right modern conveniences, but still feels like Castlevania 2, Infernax is that.
Like, I'm watching a trailer right now, and I'm going to say, like, the levels look like Castlevania 2. The gameplay looks like Splatterhouse, straight up. Like, it's shotgun, machete.
That's the only complaint I can level against it is that aesthetically it doesn't... It's not confident and cohesive enough to know for sure whether or not it wants to have that 1988 NES like seriousness to it,
right?
Versus
right.
a modern internet meme-y, here's a ton of blood and gore just for giggles. It really like it cannot make up its mind. But that's the only complaint that I can level against it.
It looks satisfying to hit skeletons with a shotgun.
Yeah. Well, and that's DLC.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Oh, no, yes. There's an unlockable mode where it's just Contra.
Yeah.
It's not even DLC. Like, after you finish the game, you can just do that.
It was DLC. Now it comes part of the game standard.
Gotcha.
I believe. I don't
I reviewed it on Switch, I think. So
you did?
Maybe it was. Yes, I want to say.
Oh, all right. Well,
Give this 7 or an 8.
Well, for most of the initial single player version, you wield a mace with about the same, slightly less range, I'd say, than a vampire killer whip.
Cool.
Yeah, but I mean, it is Castlevania 2, for all intents. The music is not quite as hummable as those classic tracks from Castlevania 2, but the choice of instruments really feels true to the period. And to the hardware and to the Konami style at the time. I'm absolutely loving that game. Randolph was very, I'm glad I'm finally getting around to trying it. Another old throwback that I'm trying is Yuzo Koshiro's Eartheon.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredibly impressive. Mega impressive, one might say. It's fantastic. It pulls off some visual tricks that it's like, holy shit, this is running on a Mega Drive. And you're like, well, of course, they could always have done that on a stock Mega Drive if they knew, if only they knew then what we know now. It's amazing. The colors are great. It's a very satisfying classic, shoot 'em up. It is everything that everyone has praised it for so far. And then the other game,
predictably great soundtrack,
predictably stellar soundtrack.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah. And then the other game, I've been following this, a YouTube channel lately it's just this Australian guy who talks about his favorite racing games, and his style is that sort of the style of the channel is that he wants to make it feel like reading a classic gaming magazine from the 90s. So he's got this deliberate style. He recommended this game. It's a game from 2010 called Nailed. It's by Techland, the makers of Call of Juarez and Dead Island, and so this Polish studio, and this was in that it is an ATV off-road racer, which was so in vogue at the time. It's a contemporary of Climax and Disney Interactive's Pure. And like something like MotorStorm, I guess, probably. So this game Nailed. So the guy recommended it by saying, you know, it's a great simple arcade racer. At the time, it was not valued because it was too simple. But like in this day and age, it's a great simple arcade racer that controls beautifully. And he said, get it now while you can. Because all of its other contemporaries have been delisted. This game's sequel, Mad Riders, has been delisted. And so he said, like, get Nailed while you can. It's only $5. It retails for $5 regularly. just try it. And I'm so glad that I did, because this game feels like everything that I like about Wipeout, which is track design. It's a crazy roller coaster, an intense sense of gravity and perspective, like wild, huge leaps and like going careening straight downhill in a way that's like truly terrifying, in these just insane, you know, reality defying tracks, but without the floaty wave race. I love Wipeout and Wave Race and Hydro Thunder in theory, but the truth is those kinds of racers always just mastering them eludes me. I wish I could enjoy them more, but the truth is I just don't. This is a racer on wheels, and your wheels grip the road and turning is easy. It's a great, fun, simple arcade racer with this crazy sense of perspective. Yeah, and it's only $5, and I love it. Mm. And I tried to show it to my family. We all had some fun times. I think Jan got a little vertigo from playing it because you are just careening downhill, and it's terrifying. But one of the best $5 I've spent in ages.
It's really nailed. The blurb on the Steam page says, buy before December 7th, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and get 10% off. Which I'm assume has been unchanged for 16 years.
Wonderful. Perfect. 10 out of 10. No, yep. Notes.
Doesn't say year. Doesn't say 2010. It just says December 7th.
December 6th.
Hey, you didn't see, you didn't see One Battle After Another yet, right?
I have not yet. No.
Oh, okay. No. Never mind. Yeah. There's some cars.
I saw this on HBO. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Okay. I knew it went up on something.
It's on Max. So maybe.
Real quick, in handheld news, I discovered some better settings for Game Hub, which is the thing that lets your Steam games run on Android using Steam Deck-style Proton interpretation. And so I made the updates to my Mangmi Air X, and I can get some pretty very lightweight Steam games running at a kind of playable speed. But I also went out and bought a $25 phone from Walmart and slapped a controller on it, and it is slightly more powerful than this $90 device. Mm. And so, like, all the Steam games that run on here, they also run on here at, like, a few frames better. So I've been seeing, like, where does it run well? Like, what can I play? I just installed Fight and Rage on this guy and was about to boot it up before the podcast started. But yeah, this phone was $25 at Walmart over the holiday season. It's just a, you know, it's a Moto G Play 2025 edition. ETA Prime did a video about it. It's for $25. It is more powerful than a lot of the Android based handhelds. It's not as good an experience because, you know, when you clamp on a stupid controller attachment, it makes it dumb. It's so wide. The screen is wider than 16:9, so there's a lot of dead space on the screen. But yeah, like,
this phone still looks to be like $30 at the moment.
So. Oh, really? Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. Looks that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. No, definitely a solid buy. And I'm looking for a better controller to attach to it that is also cheap. Something preferably with a USB-C pass-through port right on it so that I don't have to wake up the controller and wake up the phone, wait for them to pair to each other. I just want a solid USB-C connection. But yeah, I mean, this is a pet for $25, especially since I already had the controller. This is definitely a more than passable, very powerful emulation experience, and even playing a few Steam games. So that's rad. That's what's awesome. New in handhelds for me.
Did you happen to see Digital Foundry's video in the last couple of weeks on that gaming display? Highly recommend.
No.
The G-Sync Pulsar tested gaming display. They were very impressed, like beyond impressed for it. Just the way that it handles retro games on a flat display is...
Oh, really?
Just the best thing that they've played. Like, flat out, basically. Like, I know John Linneman is not a fan of LEDs to start with. No, highly recommend that one. I'm not even going to go into the deets, as the video will do a much better job.
I'm looking for it. I don't see
it's,
it.
Yeah, 9 days away. I just pulled it up.
I got it, yeah.
Digital Foundry or DF Retro?
Digital Foundry.
Oh. Yep. 9 days ago?
It's right before the Ape Escape.
The biggest leap in gaming. Yeah, right before Ape Escape with Tim Rogers. Yeah, okay, I see. Great. I'm going to start that so that it winds up in my history. And then I will watch that later.
All right.
Yep, that's all for me. So,
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
If that's it, then maybe we have a show.
I was going to say that was a couple of hours.
Okay. Well, okay. Unless you got. I wrote stuff down to talk about that's coming out this year. If you want to blast through it.
We could do that.
Yeah, sure.
I did as well. Yeah.
Because we didn't know how much we were going to have to talk about on this show. Other than me talking about
somehow.
Well, I talked about MAGFest for an hour, it seems like. We decided to look up some of the things we're looking forward to this year. I will say on the game front, I didn't put too much together.
All of mine were pretty obvious, except for I didn't realize I totally missed the Rhythm Heaven Groove announcement.
New Rhythm Heaven.
I saw that trailer came out on Halloween, so that might be why.
That was in a direct a long time ago.
Okay, yeah. I must have missed that one specifically.
No, everything else keep bugging me about.
So I did like nobody talked about that Coven of the Chickenfoot video that was in the Jeff Keighley Awards. It's the game director from Naughty Dog. It's not the writer, but it was one of the main people that did like Uncharted 2 and Last of Us, but it's a much, much smaller game. It looks gorgeous. You're following around an older woman with chicken feet with a large like monster helper sort of thing, and it just looks really, really swell on the smaller game side.
Rhythm Heaven Groove is obviously up there. See, it's like I anticipate at this point, like, really, you know, the only things, you know, that have been announced that I could really find were like AAA stuff that you know, you either already know about or maybe I'm not that interested in. Obviously, you know, Resident Evil 9 is next month. That looms pretty large. That's a big one right there. Tokan Fighting Souls should be this year, which is big and exciting.
That was on there, obviously.
Romeo is a Dead Man. That's probably the first big game for me this year.
Same.
Mio Memories in Orbit comes out tomorrow.
That's a very pretty game. Yeah.
That's on Game Pass. So by this time tomorrow, I will have played some of that game. We'll see how good it is. Maybe a lot of it, maybe a little of it. I don't know. Probably be talking about it next month. The only other thing, it was like, you know, the Saros, which is the kind of not sequel to Returnal. I'm like, well, I really like Returnal, so I'll probably like that. Zero Parades for Dead Spies, which is the Zero Time Dilemma meets that
Danganronpa.
Disco Elysium game.
Oh, is it from that studio?
It is from people who worked on Disco Elysium. Ooh. I don't know if it's from the I think it's from the studio, but yeah, the Zero Time Dilemma guy, I think, is involved with it. That's why it's zero and it is stylized like the like those games, the Zero Escape games. Well, so
if it's writers, then I am very interested.
So that's it. It's a cool looking thing. Yeah. That's all I wrote down. I was like kind of digging through my Steam library to see if I had any 2026 stuff on there. I mean, I have a demo for a game called Forbidden Solitaire, you know, I think is Solitaire plus some horror stuff to it. It's made by the same. I haven't played Home Safety Hotline yet, but I've wanted to. It's like you are taking calls from people who are dealing with like cryptids in their house and okay. giving them advice on how to deal with it.
Oh, I think I did see that trailer. That's
yeah,
fun.
So I wanted to check that out, but yeah, I got the notification there was a demo, so I'm like, I'll probably have to check that out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Something.
The trailer for Unme, if you guys haven't seen that one, is a really good trailer for it's I guess a smaller horror game. It's different aspects of a personality, but it's done in a very interesting, expressive way. And of course, Mina the Hollower will finally fucking come out.
Yeah, I'm just
everything else is giant.
Try to keep more of an eye on the indie stuff that's popping up this year. I don't care about GTA 6 the way other people do. Maybe I'll check it out eventually, but it's not a priority for me at all. And eventually, I mean, like many years down the line, because it takes a while for those games to get cheap.
Right. And everyone knows about Control 2 and Fate of the Old Republic and whatever else.
Yeah. But it's like, who knows if those are going to make it out this year. So it's like, it's so tough to say in January, but I look forward to, you know, some Nintendo Direct action and some PlayStation stuff and
some Annapurna directs.
Yeah, absolutely. But not a ton yet as far as games for this year. Dave, do you have anything?
I am looking forward to the Sega Model 3 emulator Supermodel is coming to Android. There's a port coming very soon, so I can't wait to load it up on my handheld so that I can play some Scud Race on this, because I'm absolutely addicted to Scud Race now that once I got Supermodel on my Steam Deck. That's kind of been my go-to arcade game lately, is just booting up Scud Race or Daytona 2, you know, just one of those Sega racers that we never got a home port of, and just blazing through them, because Model 3 games still look amazing. And the other thing I'm looking forward to is controller maker GameSir, who made this grip for my phone, is making a new controller in the vein of Namco's classic Nijikon 2, where there's like a little steering wheel right in the middle of the controller. a little analog steering wheel, like the PlayStation 2 Nijikon 2. So I've always wanted one of those. I look forward to having one. that's a pre-order. That's day one for me. Didn't mean for all of my predictions to be racing game based, but I guess I'm in a real racing game group now.
So. You're in a racing game.
I am hoping for a Hori Switch 2 D-pad Joy-Con.
Oh yeah, that too. Good lord.
I've been like, Limited Run Games has pre-orders up for the Nitro Deck 2, which Nitro Deck was like a grip they had for the Switch 1, and it has a D-pad on it. Yep. But it's $100. I just want a Joy-Con for like $30 to snap onto that thing and then never take off, because was what I did with the Switch 1. It is actively prevented me from getting or playing certain games on Switch 2, because it's just like, nope, if I need a D-pad, it's going on the Steam Deck.
That was one of the main, I mean, obviously the price, but I got the Switch Lite because of that D-pad. And I'm just like, it's great.
Yeah. There's a, I know that there is an adapter for you to use your Switch 1 Joy-Con on Switch 2, but it doesn't pass through data. It's purely just a physical shape thing. It still relies on Bluetooth for the connection. And those Hori ones were not... We're relied on a physical connection, so can't use it.
Yep.
God damn it.
Yep. God damn it. Movies?
Yeah. I was going to say I was like, I'll write down some TV shows. And whenever I looked, I couldn't find much. The only thing I will mention anyways, which I'm sure you know, the Nick Cage's Spider-Man Noir is finally. Which is, I didn't realize they were doing live action. So I'm curious about that.
I didn't realize that.
I'm mostly just curious. I don't really know how I'm going to feel about it, but I bet it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Still intensely weird to me that miniseries has done this much because of Spider-Verse and whatever, that it's caught on. It's fucking crazy to me.
I mean, I was still reading at that point, so I was really happy that that showed up too.
Spider-Verse is next year, right?
No, that's 2027.
That is next year.
Right, that is next year. Yeah. You know, I have enough written down. You can stop me. I wrote down stuff that might.
Well, I hope you'll have. So we always go through this thing where it's like we get to the end of the year and then Weiss talks about movies and me and Dave are like, oh, we didn't hear about that. We didn't hear about this. So now we're hearing about them ahead of time. So right. Maybe we got a chance.
Well, I'm starting with one that has been on the list for a couple years, but Trey Parker and Kendrick Lamar have had an untitled project. For the last three years that it's been announced, they keep bringing it up, and whatever it is going to be fucking interesting.
That's again, great.
Especially after this last season of South Park, I'm really interested in. And you know that Kendrick Lamar halftime show was last year. I couldn't have. I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't looked that up because it felt like
Whitney 3,000 Springs. Years ago.
No, it doesn't have a name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what the Wikipedia page is called. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, maybe it's moved a little.
Maybe
bit,
it's a working title. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know.
They announced a Jackass 5, so I'm very excited about that.
I still got to watch Jackass 4. There's no good time for me to do that, really. It's not that I'm avoiding it. It's just, you know.
No, I've started comparing. It's the way I felt about Toy Story 3 and 4. Like I was like, well, it's done. And then Jackass Forever comes out and I'm just like, no, it worked. I didn't expect it to. I still miss Dunn. I don't miss Bam as much.
I want to see Darby Allin in it.
Oh, is he going to be in it?
I don't know, but.
Like, oh, I sure do though. Yeah.
He would absolutely do something stupid. A fucking psychopath.
Honestly. Yeah. That would be amazing. Yeah, I don't think they've said anything aside from the announcement on that one. Yeah,
no, they have not. No. It might be this summer. Yeah.
I think one of the most interesting things, if they both come out this year like they're going to, Travis McKnight, who did Kubo and the Two Strings with Lyko. Lyko has not one but two movies coming, one of which is Wildwood, which is Lyko's next, which that trailer just went up. Check it out. Looks amazing. It's Lyko. It's a house and a family in Portland, and they haven't gone beyond that telling-wise. And the other movie is that live-action He-Man movie.
Wow.
He is the one directing that with Alison Brie as Evil-Lyn and shit like that.
And Jared Leto as Skeletor.
Jared Leto as Skeletor, yeah.
Which I forgot unfortunate.
It's always I still haven't watched Ares.
nope.
It's right there. I will. Fucking but if both of those come out, like, I don't know. I much like that Street Fighter movie, I wasn't really paying attention, but then I saw that he's directing it, and obviously he has a good sense of action. So I am curious about that one.
We'll see. Yeah, there's some weird – I'm sure I have a less sophisticated list than you, but yeah, I was just like, there's Mortal Kombat 2 and Street Fighter coming out this year.
No, I like that Mortal Kombat 2 trailer. Yeah, I've seen it too much at this point, but
I like Mortal Kombat, the one they did other than like the, stand-in character, but like a lot of the stuff around that was like surprisingly like pretty decent.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't Mortal see Kombat, that last
you know, one. You can't beat the 1996 Robin Shue classic.
but you've got guys like Joe Taslim and other like action stars in there, and that's super cool.
Yeah, and that they save Johnny Cage for a Johnny Cage movie.
Yes, so exactly.
It was kind of a retro. In retrospect, a very smart move, and we'll see what happens with Street Fighter, but we'll see.
Right. I know. I wanted to be on board with that wacky casting and like everything. I just didn't love what they were showing yet.
Get over Odie Rhodes with the fucking Guile hair.
I mean, that's hilarious.
It's very funny.
Yeah. I'm super hyped for Coyote versus Acme is actually coming out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Did you know not only there's a Clayface movie coming?
Yes, I did know.
Okay. So yeah, Mike Flanagan is doing that script and that is super cool. on that.
May actually work as a side character slash villain movie.
We'll yeah, see. And they got a capital H horror director, the mm-hmm. person that did Speak No Evil as the director. So,
and who's attached to play Clayface?
I don't know off the top of my head, actually.
That would have been the one piece of news that I thought that I had
heard. Yeah. I feel like...
I can't remember.
It would be... I guess my instinct would be to cast somebody that, like, meta fits that role, like an actor, face
Tom
actor.
Tom Rhys-Harries? Tom Rhys-Harries.
Tom Rhys-Harries, not John Rhys-Harries. Tom Rhys-Harries. I'm sure I do, but not off the top of my head.
Doesn't look like he's been in a whole lot of stuff.
Okay.
He was in a Doctor Who episode a couple years ago.
Who did he
for play? Him?
Be yeah, I'm sure I saw him in that. But,
He's been in some movies, but it doesn't look, yeah, I'm guessing. Okay. No real, wait, what's, no, no, not The Crow, different Crow. Never mind.
Oh, Moving was on. He the guy in the new, the fucking, that last no. Crow movie?
No, okay. No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, nobody saw that movie. Maybe he was a star of that movie.
Yeah, no.
British
actor. Yeah.
What, okay. Yeah. New Boots Riley movie is it's going to be like opening a South by. I have high hopes for that one. Great cast as always. It's going to rule. It'll be in my top five. I'm sure. It's a New Boots Riley movie. It's going to be very visual. One of the weirdest ones I'm looking forward to. I don't know if it will get done this year, but I think I might have mentioned at end of the year. So when I was talking about Shout Factory did that Deathstalker remake that I briefly mentioned. So Shout Factory is doing this thing where they're going through their back catalog and they're like, we own all these Roger Corman movies. And they went, hey, Amy Sedaris, do you and Paul Dinello that made Strangers with Candy want to pick a movie from our catalog? And they picked The Wasp Woman, an old Roger Corman horror movie that's basically, it's, you know, loosely the substance-y, but like way more tongue-in-cheek. And so the people that made Strangers with Candy, especially like Amy Sedaris is doing great right now, are going to do a throwback Roger Corman movie with a low to medium budget for wow. Shout Factory. And that sounds wild. I think that will be a lot of fun. Like how I hope.
Yeah.
Greta Gerwig's doing a Narnia movie that I would not care about a Narnia movie if it wasn't Greta Gerwig.
Wow. Okay.
But her follow-up to Barbie. So they're probably putting a lot into it. I think it's Netflix.
Okay. Well, return to classic literature for Greta.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think they're doing Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think they're picking one of the other books, which should separate it too. Brad Bird's passion project might come out this year. Ray Gun, he's been working on this 1950s, like sci-fi ish, you know, go figure, Iron Giant aesthetic.
Yeah.
Sort of thing forever. It's kind of a bummer he's working with John Lasseter, who's kind of a terrible human being. Yeah. But like that's kind of one of those things where it feels gross now that that's how you had to get the money. Yeah. But especially with Brad Bird, like looking back and a lot of analyzing the more, you know, libertarian side of like his work and all of that stuff and all of those conversations. But all of that aside, I've liked most of the things he's done. Especially animation wise. I'm guessing you might have wrote down if Godzilla Minus Zero.
I did write that down as a matter of fact. It's perhaps the movie I'm most looking forward to this year.
Yeah. That's just gonna be great.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any of the Shaun the Sheep stuff, but there's they're doing one for Halloween this year, like I believe theatrically, The Beast of Mossy Bottom, very British. You know, it's new spooky Aardman, so I'm sure at least that trailer will be super dope. And then The stuff I got left is like the more obscure stuff, but there's an anime called Daisy's Life from the guy Masaki Yuasa that I've liked a lot of his work in the last like few years. He's I think he doesn't direct, but his company produces Dan to Dan. They're the ones that produced the Scott Pilgrim anime. It's Science Saru. He's did a movie called Mind Game forever ago. He's and Ping Pong Animation.
Scott Pilgrim game's coming out this year.
And Scott Pilgrim game's coming out this year. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I'm sure that will be a super pretty experimental and weird director Ben Wheatley is making a bank robbery in a small town. He usually does very high concept sci-fi stuff. And this one has Bob Odenkirk and Henry Winkler. So I have to know what's going on with that. British director. That's the main, I'll pull up my list and see if there's anything that, I thought was more known that you guys might not have caught, but did you write anything else down, Tim, while I'm doing that?
Let's talk about some mainstream garbage.
Hey, it's all right.
Yeah,
we don't know if it's garbage yet.
No. We don't know if Avengers Doomsday is garbage yet?
Well, I didn't write that one down.
Well, that one's kind of that's just, I don't know what the hell they're doing. I'm just going to go in the theater and go, nom, 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 nom. This pig is going to eat that slop.
That Triumph commercial that was that first trailer.
God. Oh my God. Just don't know what, whatever. I am legitimately looking forward to The Mandalorian and Grogu. Forward to a low stakes, what I hope to be a low stakes, fun, enjoyable Star Wars movie with characters that I like, and a section of the universe that I like, with hopefully, disassociated from the stakes of the Skywalker saga. This is the first Star Wars movie in like 6 years. Which is a long time in this this
weirdly
climate.
as
Transformers moment.
I was gonna bring that up later. Like he couldn't wait.
Yeah, all right. He was on clearance.
Nice.
At Walmart, and he's great. He's a lot of fun. Doesn't seem to be based on any established mold, not a retool of a seeker or anything. Seems to be a wholly original guy.
Cut me off for no reason.
Sorry, no. I got Lego Mando written, not Lego, Transformers Mando right here.
Oh, anyway, okay. I couldn't tell
what Mando. Oh, you couldn't tell what it is. It's Mando. It is.
Oh, now I see the head. Yeah.
Din Djarin.
Yeah.
And he transforms into the episode one, ship that he got at the end.
The Starfighter he's got. That's cool. At some of those licensed ones. I know the DeLorean was on clearance at Target, but I didn't find it there. And I was like, the thing's okay. Trying to limit myself a little bit. I don't know. We'll talk about Transformers in a second.
All right.
Looking forward to Mandalorian Grogu.
Looks good.
Superman was good enough that I will look forward to Supergirl now, which
I do too. I liked that teaser enough, even though it's very different. It's the director of Cruella, which I also surprisingly really liked.
And I didn't know
Itania,
that. Yeah. Now I'm more excited for it.
Yeah.
And Itania that I don't, but I like visually, which makes sense for that.
We got the Odyssey, of course.
There is a
new Spider-Man movie, which there's really not a lot of word out about. Brand New Day. We'll see. This is at the point where everybody has forgotten who Peter Parker is. Who knows where they're going to go with that one. But I like Spider-Man still. So here we are. The Last Airbender movie, animated movie. That's like a sequel to the first series.
There's the Aang movie.
Yes.
And then there's
Legend of Aang.
The Legend of Aang. Yeah. So that is animated, correct?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. That's then yes, I am also looking forward to that.
What was the other thing you were going to say?
No. Well, the other one is the show, the post. Well,
that doesn't come out till next year, unfortunately. Right. So that's a ways off. But yes, the Legend of Aang, The Last Airbender, comes out in like
October. And yes, I'm excited for that too. No, I do have that on my list. Yeah. I just wasn't sure.
ways off though. So yeah, that's all the stuff that I wrote down. I mean, there was a lot of other, it's like, oh, properties, sequels, et cetera.
Yeah.
Et cetera,
obviously but, Dune is coming out. Last one I liked more than the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
I mean, I like the first one. So yeah.
I'll and I like the first one. Like it's, I know people that like very much like worship at the altar of those. And I'm not at that level. But yeah, I really respected the last one for deviating from the book in the way that it did, which it had to do.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
No, yeah, the villain in The Legend of Aang is played by Batista, so I always...
That's, yep.
I'm always there for Batista.
Hell, yeah. Well, speaking of Dune.
Yeah, that's what reminded me.
Okay, yeah. I'm so curious about, follow me on this, Scary Movie 6, because Scary Movies 2 through 4, perhaps 5, came out so fast that they were making fun of things like trailers and just trying to pump them out. This has been like 13 years and there's a lot to make fun of. And it's
Yeah. And it's somehow coming out like a few months after Scream 7.
Right.
Yep. Which is insane to me that like also they're on, I wasn't really paying attention now that I say it out loud that they're at a seventh Scream movie. I missed some along the way, apparently. All I know is the Ghostface mask is like some weird horny thing on the internet.
As someone who didn't love the first Scream, I never thought of it as a franchise. All of a sudden there were four movies and everybody loved it. And it just passed me by.
Did they love it or they just like the first one and then there was also other ones?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No,
All right.
Definitely. Okay. Especially, I think, or I don't know. Like there was.
Okay. All right.
People have debates, especially like, it's a horror franchise, right? You're going to.
I watched the first one, and that was it.
Yeah. And I watched the clip of Jay and Silent Bob in I think 3, because that's era. Funny. Yep. Yeah. there's Toy Story 5, new Spielberg movie. Super interested in. I mean, he's weirdly enough, I'm usually not with Spielberg Alien mixes. E.T. I like a lot more now than I did then. Close Encounters again is very good, but I like everything else around it more, and I don't like War of the Worlds. But that trailer is super interesting, and again it's another I want to see his point of view. You know, it feels like that movie wants to go like people are. I mean, it's literally like a line in the trailer. It's like people are itching for truth and something that feels real after everything's been like covered up. And I want to see how far he pulls that theme, because I think that could be interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm super interested about Maggie Gyllenhaal's The Bride, I don't love that trailer at all. But I think that movie could be really fun.
Oh, yeah.
Similar with Silent Hill. Similar with new Sam Raimi that's out this month. Doing a movie called Send Help. There's a new Sam Raimi horror movie this month that nobody's talking about. New Gore Verbinski. Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die. People had a lot of... That was the last secret film at Fantastic Fest this year. That was the one that kind of blew people's minds because like there was nothing about it yet. That trailer is really fun and bombastic.
Gotta love actually surprising people.
I know it happens so rarely at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything. I'll throw out another Coyote versus Werewolf, or Coyote versus Acme, it's more like a couple directors I like have things coming out, but like nothing. Yeah. That, I think I Love Boosters is going to be a surprise for a lot of people. I think that'll be, because that drops in May. Like, I know, again, like, it's playing at South By. It's big and bright and loud, and people will be itching for escapism and expressism, and also very loud leftist social commentary. Yeah. That's picks I got.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have anything?
No, yeah. I did not have time to participate in this exercise or look up.
Anyway, Transformers.
Anyway, Transformers.
Did you put together your Devastator?
Oh, he is. Let me see if I. There he is. He's hiding away.
Lording over everything.
Lording over everything, because that's the only place.
Mine's over here to like the. I can't turn my. If I have to pick it up, he's right there. There he is.
Oh man, he's so big. Yeah, I would need to completely rearrange everything else on my shelves in order to get him like to fit with everybody.
Yeah. Well, I have to, I kind of have to rotate what's on my shelf over here, and also fucking Juggernaut's over there. I don't know if I showed you guys that guy. He's freaking huge. Let me see if I can get him out without breaking everything.
Ben Wheatley also, even though Ben Wheatley did a lot of indie movies, he also did Meg 2, by the way, just letting you know.
Nice. Yeah. So.
Oh, he's very chunky.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
I had seen gigantic. Of that one, actually.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Ugh. Freaking big ass Juggernaut. Almost knocked over Soundwave.
He's great.
Yeah, no, I'm like, hang out back there, buddy. I think Blitzwing is still down there somewhere. Yeah, he is. Transformers. I was like on the the heels of putting together Devastator. I was like, oh man, maybe I should like go for putting together Bruticus because they're putting that out.
Yeah.
And I did get Vortex.
Reviews are excellent so far.
But like, well, the problem is that the prices on everything went up this year already on Transformers.
What are deluxes like, now?
Deluxes are like over 25, and a Voyager is like a little over 40.
Like that.
This was the thing. Well, it's like once I saw that what's his name, Onslaught, is going to be like $100, I was like, I don't think I'm going to go down this road. Yeah. I don't think I can go down this road. And they've also like, I've seen people kind of criticizing the way they do. They did this with Menasor. They did this with Superion. They're doing this with Bruticus, where the, you know, the central combiner comes with kind of like a framework.
A frame, stick. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't stick. Devastator has like parts that he came with to fill him out. But you know, you are putting those bots together.
Yeah.
And they are all sticking together. But with the new ones, you just kind of snap pieces onto the shell of Bruticus or Superion or whatever. It doesn't look quite as cool to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But just kind of the expense proposition of like two Voyager figures plus $100 Onslaught. It was just like, you know what? I don't need to do that.
There was a hot minute where at near the end of December, Silverbolt, he's the main component of Superion, right? Yeah, he was on clearance. He was readily available on clearance at a lot of Targets for like 60, 70, I think, instead of 100. And that's a price point at which I was like, you know, I've never really cared about Superion. Like, I don't think the individual figures are interesting, and I don't think he's interesting as a combiner. Mm-hmm. But like, if this is the centerpiece of it, might this make it easier for me to track the rest of them down if I knew that I had the main guy for a discount? And I decided no, ultimately, because I just don't care. Bruticus, however, is very cool. Like,
yes,
each of the individual, like, you know, individual bots are very cool. The styling is cool. I love the colors on all of them. I've always thought Bruticus was very cool.
Yeah, Bruticus is very cool. So I'm just working on the Blockies version instead, because I lucked out in my toy store had somebody who didn't need an Onslaught, so I was able to get him individually, and then I just lucked out and got Brawl.
Oh,
so
man.
Like, I'm well on the way already.
Right on the way.
But yeah, I was just like, I was in the store this past Friday, and I'm like looking at Wind Charger, which just came out from the 86 line, and it's like $26, and he's like, you know, he's like he's teeny tiny. But I did get Quickstrike, who is like my favorite Beast Wars freak. He's a scorpion with a cobra tail. Like this thing, I just
yeah that's a great design.
It just rules. It's just so dumb and cool. And I had the original figure, or I still have the original figure somewhere. The original figure, this part here, the tail was rubbery, so you could like pick up water with it and then spit it.
Oh, jeez.
This one you cannot do that, unfortunately, but it's cool. So yeah, I only ended up picking up Quick Strike. And that was it. Cause I'm just like, I just can't, you know, for a deluxe figure, which were 20 just a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, now I'll have to wait for Target clearance deals.
Yeah.
See if Studios, I can get lucky.
Studio series has had a lot of straight up incredible releases, like just really great stuff. And, Age of the Primes is going to have some good stuff too. But when I, now that I've got some years of perspective and I can look at how, there he is.
That was really good.
The Myth, the Legend. I think personally, and maybe this is just because this is where I entered the toy line. I have a real, I miss the look of the Siege Earthrise figures. I get that Studio Series and most of the new figures are leaning toward a very clean, very sort of flat, cartoon accurate look. But for me, I think Siege and Earthrise was the sweet spot in terms of it looking like a detailed robot, but still accurate to the G1 design.
Yeah, that's fair. So this is like, if I'm going to make a direct comparison, it would be the 86 Starscream, which did have that mold, and the new Thundercracker, which has a more smoothed out one, but looks awesome.
Looks awesome. I can't deny they look awesome, but like... I really do. I miss when they look like robots and not like cartoons.
No, see, I like that they look like. I am on team cartoon.
All right,
I like that they look like cartoons. But I get it. I mean, I think they all look good.
Yeah, totally.
But I am more invested in cartoon signed at this point. But yeah.
Well, it's great to have the choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll all loop back around again, and once they're done doing the 86 line at some point. I mean, there's only so many more they can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. But,
I just wanted
to bitch about them getting too expensive.
Rightly so.
Yeah.
My total tangent was, one of the Oscar contenders for shorts went up online for a few days, which was Cartoon Saloon's entry. You might remember as the people that did Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea and like they fucking rule. It's a little short called Iru, E-I-R-U. When that goes online again, fucking watch that. It rules. It's what you wanted Brave to be, I think. You know, young redheaded warrioress.
Got it.
15 minute story. Bing, bang, boom.
Spell that again for me.
E-I-R-U.
E-I-R-U. There it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing. Yeah. Yep. And you're just watching that hair for 15 minutes, basically.
Oh, she's got a great nose.
Yep. Yeah, the design's amazing. That and the first episode of this season of Primal. Gorgeous animation.
All right.
Cool. Yep, that's it. Yeah. Now I have one thing to root for in the Oscars.
All right, hey, that's going to do it for this episode, prolonged episode.
As it turned out.
As it turned out.
Yeah.
These months when we don't play any or watch anything.
Oh, we got nothing to talk about. What are we going to do? All right.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. You who decided to watch. Thanks for sticking with us for a long episode. Tune in again nearish the end of February, and we'll have for all of our Valentine's games hot takes for the Valentine's Day games.
Beautiful boyfriend.
I should play a romance game sometime between now and
play a dating sim. They're great.
All right. Here we go. Signing off. About to click stop.
Okay. Stop.
All right.
And peace.
I'm going to do it. Okay. I'm doing it. All right. Click. And bye.